bit of the one you emailed me.
Oh, okay.
It was like 2 hours. I didn't...
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I go long, typically. So it's okay to record you?
Yes.
And what about sharing this?
Yeah.
Okay.
If I was going to record too, but...
That's fine.
I mean, yeah. I guess there's no point in having two.
No. You do you. Your data management is your data management, right?
Well, but like when I talk...
Would you like a chair?
That might be nice.
There's some chairs over there. Okay. You can grab
When I talk to journalists, sometimes I like to say, like, on the record in both directions.
Oh, yeah,
and then record it myself.
That's a good way to do it. I've just found in the current era that, like I've said on other recordings, that recording conversations is extremely valuable, that they'll never happen again. And it may become very valuable to me for other reasons.
Yeah, because there's that thing where, like, the tragedy of episodic memory where, like, you don't quite remember what happened. There's so much of your life that if you don't immediately write a diary entry afterwards, you don't remember what happened.
That's why very important people write everything down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That is... I'm learning as I go, you know. I was actually on my way over here thinking about this. I only had a short time to think about it. And you referenced being an autodidact at one point. And I was thinking, well, everybody's an autodidact.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yes.
It's just where are you, how efficient are you at doing it? But also, have you been taught not to think? Because there's a lot of effort that's put in to make sure people don't think. And the thing is, in a way, you start out, in my opinion, at a higher level of capacity to learn for yourself. And people try to teach you not to.
Yeah.
And then after you leave university, now you have to again.
Yeah.
And that's a problematic situation. And then where we land on the spectrum of your ability to learn on your own is different for all of us. So some people may be better than others, but it's not that others aren't.
Yeah.
We're continually learning. And regarding these recordings, it's like, this is my first run through life. And maybe I wasn't taught the right stuff from extrinsically. And I'm at 55 learning more and more every day about how should I go through life. And cheap available technology. Yeah. I can make videos now at no cost.
Right.
I can publish.
Zero marginal cost.
There's zero marginal cost for so many forms of media and creation in the current era that things that were true when I was a teenager, i.e., it's expensive to take pictures, so we're not going to take pictures.
Yeah.
Well, that's not true anymore. It's not expensive to take pictures, so how do we handle cameras when it's not expensive to take pictures? Mm-hmm. Now, we obviously see examples of too many people taking too many bad pictures, but also in certain situations, people not taking pictures at all when they should, or not taking enough. Like, I have a rule when I take pictures, like holiday snaps, like, I always take like 8 or 10 pictures.
Yeah.
Why would you take one? Well, you choose the best one.
Yeah.
Because it's a moment, and moments can be bad. So people that take a holiday snap, take one picture, and it's like, who taught you to take one picture?
Uh-huh.
That's at least 20 years antiquated as we look at things.
Yeah.
So that idea was taught that you would only take one picture. Because if you thought about it...
There's only 24 exposures on the roll of film.
Well, that's the world I grew up in. And
yeah.
Like, I mean, I ride bicycles and a lot of things that I do when I'm on the trail or whatever like that. I'm unlearning everything I knew. Because things that I knew or were true are no longer factual or true.
Yeah.
And that's probably the hardest thing. Learning things the first time is easy. Unlearning things and replacing them with new ideas is really fucking hard. Man, anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, you wanted to come talk.
Yeah, so basically I noticed your posters.
Of course.
And I was like,
there's something there.
There's something there. I wanna see what this thing is. So like, my tragic backstory here is that like I've sort of had this like ideological grudge against school for the past 15 years.
Not unfounded.
Where, I mean, I don't know how much time we want to spend on my tragic backstory, but like...
I read a few of your articles.
Okay.
Okay. Because I like to know who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
In one of your posts, you make an excellent case for your return to school, but also argue why your incentives may be less pure than you want to give yourself credit for.
Yeah.
In that you may be trying to prove to others that you have value.
Yeah.
That they're only capable of assigning you if you have this diploma. Or in some various other things in there. And I understand, and it was very well written in the sense that I think these are ideas that many people that are returning to school have, and it depends on why they're returning to school.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to sort through that. Because it's easy, a kid coming out of high school, why are you going to school? Well, because everyone's going to school, that's what you do. Well, returning to school is a whole different thing.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to make an explanation. And it could have real meaning. You make the argument that it's not necessarily that you can't earn money without the diploma. You've proven you can. But there's something else that you're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm going to write a follow-up. I was going to do it during spring break. I didn't quite have time. But, like, I'm going to write a follow-up post, like, explain that, like, actually, this turned out to be, like... So, you know, I'm finishing up these two semesters to finish up my bachelor's degree. It's actually been better than I expected it.
What does that mean?
So, like, the value add of school.
Value add in what way?
The graduate level math classes are actually good. Like, it's
you're entertained by them, or you are becoming a sharper tool?
I am becoming a sharper tool.
Okay. Okay.
And, like...
I'm just trying to clarify what we're talking about, because these things can have meanings in different directions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Cause like a lot of my frustration with school, and like, so I, in the advice to a student interview, I really liked how you pointed out that like a lot of these gen ed courses are like training people to be dishonest.
Oh, they are. They're intended to do that.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's a terrible thing for someone to learn to do.
Yeah. And like.
And inauthentic.
Yeah.
And I have that up here.
Yeah.
You know.
And so like. I feel like a lot of, like, I'm actually sort of, like, not completely rethinking my anti-school ideology, but, like, tweaking it a bit, because, like, and thinking, like, so, like, my ideological grudge was generalized from this experience of, like, having spent a lot of time in school and, like, suddenly noticing, you know, in 2007 that, like, hey, the stuff I do on the internet is actually, like, better work.
Sure.
The stuff I do out of my own curiosity and ambition is just better intellectual work.
That has always been true and will remain always true.
Yeah, but for, like, for the humanities, this is very, very obvious. For some of the, like, higher-level math courses... This is, like, somewhat less obvious.
You're saying there's certain things that a classroom really does help.
Yeah.
Get there.
So, like, I don't want to overstate it because, like, because a lot of people, like, don't even have the concept that you can do technical things outside of school.
Right. Correct.
But, like, once you do have that a little bit of extrinsic motivation can actually, and, like, externally exposed structure, like... If you do it correctly, it's not necessarily a completely bad thing.
I refer to the concept maybe you're referring to regarding the classroom environment now that you're experiencing as an accountability mechanism.
Yeah, exactly.
In large part. It also is a certain way of showing up that's difficult to do on your own.
Yeah.
And, you know, I share some ideas with you, obviously. I did not get a bachelor's degree when I was coming straight through out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I had no business being in school at the time. Mm-hmm. My head was not screwed on straight. Mm-hmm. And I'm a late bloomer.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. That I had a difficult upbringing in certain ways. And when I went to university, it was an abject waste of money. Mm-hmm. And probably time. Shouldn't have been there. Mm-hmm. I'm not arguing I should have been where I did end up or go immediately. But I was not. I shouldn't have been there. Mm-hmm. And I spent the next, say, 8 years working. Mm-hmm. Real jobs.
Yeah.
Factory work. Machine shop work. You know, I rose up through the trades, so to speak. And finally, I was at a job where I was a tool room machinist, which is a fairly high position mm-hmm. in a factory. And I was going to engineering meetings and dealing with engineers all day. And I couldn't believe how much smarter I was than they were.
Yeah.
And this isn't the, you know, street ball versus pro ball type of argument. This is like, no, they were, some of them were dumb mm-hmm. and didn't know what they were talking about. And I said, fuck it, I need to go to school. They're making way more money than me.
Yeah.
I should get that. Because this was a certain type. I was in a Fortune 200 company. It was a Parker Hannifin division, which is a big industrial company. Uh-huh. And I wanted to move up to engineering. And I talked to my bosses about me moving into engineering. And they said, Pete, you don't have a college diploma. Uh-huh. If you had a college diploma in basket weaving, we could move you up into engineering.
Which is insane.
Yes. Oh, believe me, this pissed me off. It was corporate policy of a massive industrial corporation that you couldn't move up to the engineering department without a degree, a college diploma. And I was like, this is fucking bullshit. So I ended up leaving my job and returning to school. Mm-hmm. And it was actually nice. I went to Santa Rosa Junior College for my, you know, my math and my physics mm-hmm. to get that stuff done before going off the 4 years.
When you went the first time, like, what were you, class, did you not get take the...
Oh, wait, when I was younger?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was a clown show. I mean, it was just, I was a philosophy major.
Yeah.
I didn't belong there. But I was trying to figure out
I made the same mistake.
Yeah.
So when I went to UC Santa Cruz the first time in 2006 out of high school, I thought, you know...
What better than philosophy?
Because I was interested in philosophy.
Sure.
So you know, if you believe that schooling and education are the same thing, well, major in philosophy.
Right.
And, like, it turns out... And so, like, now I'm...
Academic philosophy is not the same thing
as... Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
So now, in retrospect, like, I wish I had this idea of, like, no, do philosophy on the internet, major in math.
Sure. I did... Certainly when I was younger, there was a lot of things I could have done better than I did. Uh-huh. But anyway, I was a much older person returning to school at, I think, 28 or 29.
Okay.
And I had developed.
Yeah.
I understood why I was there, but also I did all the calculus and all the physics. I could do the work. I was getting A's and B's. It was fine. And life derailed me on some other issues. Mm-hmm. And by the time I could go back, I was like, you know what? I'd have to relearn calculus to get back in the groove. And I think this ship has sailed. And
can you talk about the derailment?
Well, it was just a family business thing and my brother's situation and my father's situation. I had to go run a company and do all sorts of stuff. And then when I could return, it was just not right or whatever. Hmm. And I'm fine with that, you know, personally.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't think that a college diploma has any value, really. It does show, it did back then,
uh-huh.
or not necessarily then, but going back 20 or 30 years, it did show a certain level of rigor and completion that you may have gotten, assuming you went to a real school,
uh-huh.
not a beer and football school, because they're out there and they graduate a lot of people that majored in beer and football.
Also a real major, not just the school.
Or if you did a real major, right. But
like, for example, at SF State, like, it may not be a prestigious school, but like, I think the math department is real.
Well, sure. It's hard not to. It's hard to screw math up.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's pretty well. Like you'd have to be a real messed up department if you just couldn't teach math.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
That's not a and it's not controversial in any way. But the thing is that in the current era, I think most people in society understand now that a college diploma means absolutely nothing other than a box is checked on an application. And I make a lot of arguments to students that what they should be focusing on is portfolio, because that demonstrates their true capacity and what they have actually done, versus a diploma from whatever institution is in large part meaningless and fraudulent. But I'm not talking about sour grapes here. I'm not talking about, well, since I don't have one, then it doesn't matter. Believe me, had I gotten a diploma earlier on in life, my life would be different. I would have had a lot more opportunities. I tell young people, yes, go get a college diploma. Absolutely, get it as soon as you can. Get it as cheap and as quick as you can. That should be your determining factors. How fast and how cheap can I get this? Because it's fucking meaningless other than checking a box. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't be learning. I mean, it was Mark Twain that said, don't let school get in the way of an education, right? And this was true back in the late 1800s. It continues to be true. Your education is not school.
Yeah.
They're different things. And so here I am working at a university. I deal with students and instruct them and try to help them and teach them. I deal with professors of whatever all the time in STEM. So I deal with physics professors and chemistry professors and engineering people. And they have a PhD. I have no diploma. Sometimes it's indeterminate who's the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and seeing a lot of the sausage being made at a higher education school and what the academy really means is instructive on my viewpoint that get the college diploma, you need to check that box, get it cheap and fast, focus on your portfolio. And if most people did that, they would be doing far better in this world. We graduate. I mean, the majority of our graduates coming out of this institution are valueless.
Yeah.
They are incapable of contributing much to whatever endeavor they're going to join.
Yeah. What you said about portfolios, I really let... So... I'm very, very grateful to the technology industry for being, like, less credentialist than a lot of places.
Yes.
Because, you know, as, you know, if you can prove that you can code, if you can show that you can write software, then there are a lot of companies that will just respect that.
Yes.
And so, like, so...
It has been a boon for people that weren't...
People like us.
Yeah. Yeah. For well, not necessarily me, but I've known plenty of people that... failed out of high school and made damn good money as software engineers.
Yeah, so like...
Because it was about what they were doing, not how well they sat in a classroom.
Yeah, so like at, you know, like 12 years ago, I was here at SF State and like just really, really angry all the time because like...
Anger is not a great thing unless you learn to harness it.
Yeah,
I'm a believer in the dark side of the force.
Yeah, but it was...
I'm not with Darth Vader. That's my bag.
I was not harnessing it effectively.
Right. You go down like Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah. I was here because, like, I felt, like, for lack of perceived other opportunities, like, my father was willing to pay for me to go to college, but I was just mad because, like, I thought I could do, like, really good intellectual work that was, like, not being captured by school.
And you found out that...
And I was right! I was fucking right!
Oh, well, sure, I read in your thing, though, that you explain in one of your blog posts that you would take a math test or something and not perform the way you expected to perform.
Yeah, so there was the part of the tragic backstory is that, like, okay, maybe it is worth spending a few minutes on this. Because, like, I was in Santa Cruz. I went to Santa Cruz out of high school. That was in 2006. And then there was this, in, like, fall quarter 2007, I was taking the Introduction to Feminisms class, which...
That must be really fun when you see Santa Cruz.
Well, I
probably get thrown out of the university if I
was. So right. I have ideologically evolved a lot since then.
Uh-huh.
But at the time, I was proud and honored to be taking Introduction to Feminisms, and like as a male taking this class, I wanted to like do.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm not against the class existing.
Yeah.
Certainly that class at UC Santa Cruz must be a train wreck.
Yeah.
But I'm also one of a person that thinks that men can't be feminists.
Yeah.
Inherently. But that doesn't mean I don't believe in women's suffrage, liberation, all that, and the capacity that all people can have. But the thing is that... The modern, let's say,
yeah.
extremely, let's say, the wokistan perspective on these things is unaligned with reality.
Yes,
and that's a bad.
And
place
I was starting.
To put kids.
I was starting to notice that. Like, I was starting to notice this at the time, but like, did not fully notice it.
Sure.
Because like,
but that's okay. You were young and dumb,
yeah.
And that's what we do.
Yeah. So like, it's not okay, but it is what it is.
No. You We all grow, and we oftentimes... How's this? I have a very difficult time explaining to students how to get where they need to get to. It is a very challenging thing to tell a young person what to do or how to approach things. Essentially, we're looking for integrity and authenticity in all things we do.
Uh-huh.
But... As a young person, you need to try on some silly hats for a while to figure out which one fits you best. But that means that some of those hats you're going to be pretty inauthentic in.
Yeah.
And you're going to learn that, yeah, I'm kind of faking to wear this hat. And that's what we do to grow up. If you're not going through that process,
mm-hmm.
How do you find out what's right or wrong for you? It's the people that are so... tied to their convictions too early on that can't ever change in productive or meaningful ways. So you're going to that class as a college freshman, going to that university and thinking you're one of the good ones is perfectly fine. You took away something from that.
Well,
not necessarily what they wanted you to take away. How's that? You mentioned it.
Yeah, so like, anyway, it turned out, okay, what ended up happening, I had a pretty bad nervous breakdown because like, so this whole, the problem that I had at the time with, I wanted to believe in the course, but it was just sort of taught in a language that I didn't speak, and in fact still don't speak.
But it may also have been fraud.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm alluding to.
No, I've worked at this university for a long time, this one.
Yeah.
We do a lot of fraud here.
Yeah.
We lie to students.
Well, it's just, but like, just the thing they do in these alleged social science and courses where they say like, they just call a lot of things oppression and like...
Correct.
In a way that like...
They train you to be a victim and think as if you are a victim,
and, like,
and that the world owed you something that you didn't get, which are very problematic things for people to think.
Yeah, but and so I, like there's this thing that like where I was I mean not in so many words at the time, but like I wanted to be like I had this general attitude of like yes, of course I'm a good person and agree, but. Like, I want to know how the oppression works. Like, if you're going to do interesting social science, you
show
want to
me the mechanisms.
Show me the mechanisms.
Sure.
And
they can't.
And they can't, exactly.
Right. Well, that's because it's fraud.
Right.
And my argument isn't that feminism is a bad concept or that real gains weren't necessary for a long time. They really are. Or that everything's equal now.
You don't need to include the disclaimers for my sake.
No, I understand there's an audience with
the audience has to know.
Right. But the thing is that there's a big difference between what first wave and second wave feminists were talking about, and I guess we're probably at least on the fifth wave now, and we're in full wokistan.
Yeah.
And
I also have a funny story about the transgender part.
I'll talk to you more, but it's utterly delusional in the current state. But more than anything, especially at this university with the social programming that they try to do to all students, is whether you're a woman, feminist, a woman, whether you're black, whether you're trans, whatever the fuck your disposition is in this world, let's assume you're a victim.
Yeah.
Let's assume you've been truly wronged, not just you masquerading your great-grandparents' oppression as your own, but no, you have been oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
It does you zero good
mm-hmm.
to believe that you need to act that way ever. That is not a helpful thing to do. If you have been victimized, if you have been oppressed, moving forward with your life, thinking about your victimhood and oppression is of zero use to you and will hold you back.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the plan here? Why are you teaching people to think as victims or as oppressed people when that will only retard them rather than move them forward? The best thing you can train a victim to do is to believe that their world is full of potential.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they can go out and realize that.
Mm-hmm.
So we do, in fact, the exact opposite of what we would purport to do. We hurt people by teaching them not history. I'm all in favor of accurate and true history, but to think as victims, to think as oppressed people. Now you can go on.
Yeah, so anyway, I had this, so like this class was like taught in a language that I didn't speak because I wanted the mechanisms and I just didn't know how, and so like.
You're a numbers guy.
Yeah, well no, not even that, I'm a philosophy guy.
Okay, yes.
But like.
Sure. You wanted to hear it from using that type of language.
I'm an analytic philosopher, yeah. Anyway, so there was this final paper with, and I could not write the final paper for this class. I just didn't speak the language, and I was just so ashamed of not being able to meet the word count that I just had this like multi-hour like
word count. There you go.
Well,
counting words is a problem.
But like I was just so ashamed that I had this like really, really long, like really, really dramatic crying breakdown. Like,
why was it so important that you were to be an ally, a good one, a feminist? Like, as it sounds like you thought
really
you were
believed.
Aligned, but you were misaligned in fact.
Yeah.
Somehow.
I mean, I'm over it now, but at the time.
No, but why was it so crucial that you were to be able to say, I'm a good feminist?
Well, so, I mean, as a teenager, I was like very, very passionate about.
Social
what
justice.
At the time. Well, no, not social justice in general, but like at the time I would call it anti-sexism.
Uh-huh.
These days, in retrospect, it looks like psychological sex differences denialism, but of course I didn't call it that at the time.
That's hilarious. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at
no,
your
it's
expression
yeah.
of what you're saying. That yes, there is a problem in whatever, I don't know which era of feminism it was.
Uh-huh.
Maybe fourth or fifth wave. Whatever, I'm not a scholar on that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, the denial that boys are different than girls.
Yeah, I was very.
Is fucking nuts.
I was very passionate about this at the time.
Yeah, yeah, that's.
I mean, so, like, also, like, another contributing factor is that, like. Oh, sorry, this is another long story. but like very, very brief. So this is also a very awkward thing, but like very briefly, like I think I have the same underlying psychological quirk that like makes guys like me become trans women in the current era, which I think was a contributing factor to the psychological sex differences denialism, because I didn't want to believe that girls were a different thing than me.
I'm trying to understand what you think that mechanism is, because I've heard various...
That makes guys...
What would make you become trans? Or...
This is a very awkward story. I don't know... Well, I don't know... Is this supposed to be a family-friendly recording? No, I already blogged about this stuff.
You can talk about whatever you want.
Okay,
I'm totally open to it.
Have you heard the phrase, the term autogynephilia?
Excuse me?
Autogynephilia.
I think I have, but you reiterate so I'm clear.
So it's from the Greek for, I think it's Greek and not Latin, for love of oneself as a woman.
Uh-huh.
So basically it's like normal male heterosexuality, but instead of wanting to have sex with women, it's just imagining like, well, it's like admiring women and being like, well, what if that were me? Wouldn't that be awesome?
I think anyone with a certain level of empathy to bring it down to the lowest level of that feeling where you can place yourself in someone else's shoes might go through that. I mean, certainly I've thought something like that.
Yeah, but like...
It hasn't taken over much of my world.
Yeah, but like, so imagine
so
like,
if it took
so
over
okay, but like,
your
you
world.
Can you can empathize with like that idea being appealing. So imagine like someone who that like that is kind of their entire sexuality.
That's their bag.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then like
we're all into different shit.
Yeah. So like, you know, in previous generations, a lot of these men would just live their lives as like pretty conventional men and like, you know, maybe wear their wives' clothes on the weekend or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think like in the current era,
back in the day we used to call them transvestites.
Exactly.
Nowadays that's all confused with current language.
Yeah.
But the thing is, a man that was a transvestite wasn't the same thing as a gay man.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that was it's difficult for me to know how clear that was for everyone else.
Yeah.
But I grew up...
This used to be pretty obvious, and now...
Sure. and everything's clouded, and we have a lot of crazy stuff that's going on right now that I hope resolves itself, because I think a lot of people are getting hurt by, let's hope, well-intended people. And hopefully not by profiting people. But it's a difficult environment currently, and you might have just been at a leading edge of feeling these feelings. And
this was
before it got crazy.
Yeah, this was in 2007.
Sure.
So, because I mean, like, from
my perspective, 2007 is just the other day.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking.
I started my gender politics blog in 2016, and that was when it was like actually became like a crisis emergency. Like,
sure.
Because like at the time. So I actually discovered this word autogynephilia in 2006, reading Wikipedia, and I was like, oh, there's a word for the thing. And I just didn't, it was actually coined in the context of...
So why did that mean something within the context of a feminist class?
Oh, I mean, it didn't... I mean, just... I'm my theory is that it was a contributing factor to...
Here. Hold on, we got a knock at the door. Hold on.
Did you want to watch?
No, I'm busy right now.
Okay.
Yeah. He's doing some surface mount electronics in the other room. We're going to check him out. Float it.
Yeah.
Okay.
My theory is that was a contributing factor to why I was so passionate about psychological sex differences denialism, which is
why I wanted
to believe. Anyway.
Yes.
I had this... Going away from the gender politics track and back to the school track, because these are these two huge projects.
Yes.
Yeah. I had this really, really bad nervous breakdown, and like at the end of it, I was like, you know what? I suddenly had this like attitude shift towards school, where like before, like I still believed in like, you know, I didn't always do my homework, but when I didn't do it, I felt guilty about it because I still believed in the schooling education thing that I had been taught. And suddenly, I realized, wait a minute, schooling and schooling and like the actual learning that I obviously do by reading a lot. And like writing in my diary or blog comments or whatever. Like, clearly these are not actually the same concept. Maybe I don't need school. Maybe I should just be thinking about how to make money.
Sure. That's not irrational.
Yeah.
In any way. How's this? That's the reason why I send 18-year-olds to war. Because a 30-year-old would not do that kind of thing. That would be unreasonable, right? There's a reason why you send 18-year-olds to college. That's the time you got them. And you can get them to sit in a classroom and believe that this 24-year-old that's standing up in front of them really knows a lot. When, in fact, that person standing in front of them doesn't know much, just knows a little more than they do. You couldn't... Like, it would be very difficult for me to return to school, to engineering school now. Not just because of my feelings about the institution, but the fact that... I mean, you ever see that movie, Rodney Dangerfield's Back to School?
No.
It's... You might like it a lot. It came out way before your time, but it's about this old business guy who goes to school because his son's going to school. And so he's like, fuck it, I'm rich, I'm fine, I'm gonna go to school with you, you know, which is kind of a funny presence. And do you know who Rodney Dangerfield is?
He's an actor.
He's a comedian. So, yeah, he's a particular type of comedy. The thing about it is, he's going to the school and these teachers are trying to tell him how it works, and he's like, that ain't how it works.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the premise in some ways, other than his relationship with his son. But the thing is that it gets really hard to go to school because you realize these people have no fucking idea what they're talking about.
Well, so
or they only know the academic approach or something like that. So you're feeling
to
be reasonable.
That's actually why, you know, my return to school is going better than I expected. Like, I'm very glad I did it. I think I'm getting value out of it. I'm actually going to be proud of the degree to some extent. Because, it's not because of the bullshit gen ed classes, but, like, specifically the graduate math classes.
The part that's sharpening your tool.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, I...
And that's...
I actually... There's, like, a lot of classes where I'm like, okay, this is fraud.
Yeah.
But, like, specifically the graduate math classes, I'm like... I respect your authority. Like,
sure, and that's true and fine. I'm not. My argument isn't that I'm smarter than every fucking person in the world.
Yeah.
It's just I've seen behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And I've been along enough that I'm just like, get real.
Yeah.
You know. But the thing is, I'm perfectly happy to accept that these classes are great for you. If they're resonating with you and causing you to rethink how you approach the problem solving that you think is important, then that's awesome. We don't get a lot of that around here.
Yeah.
Right? Most people taking that class, I'm sure if you took a poll, don't know what the fuck they're doing in that room or why. Don't even know why it might be valuable. And you sitting there going, oh my gosh, I can use this for that. I can do that. This is, oh my gosh, it's such an easier way to do this. Well, most of the people in your class, if you're in a graduate level class, what's the last job they had being an undergraduate student?
Yeah. I mean, this isn't even like necessarily job relevant. It's just like...
Or just whatever you're into. Like,
yeah.
Like, I do plenty around here. Bicycles, motorcycles, and skateboards. They aren't my job.
Yeah.
You know, being here for students is my job, in large part, or professors. But the thing is, it's like, I spend a great deal of time trying to figure out what tools might make that different.
Yeah.
You know, or how far back it goes. Like, I just worked on a hydraulic power unit over there that now I have hydraulic power in the shop in any way I might configure it. And that might help me make another tool. And that tool helps me make a part, and that part helps me make a bike.
Yeah.
And those are the problems I'm working on. And they're not my job.
Yeah.
They're what I'm doing because we have to spend our time on Earth doing something.
Yeah.
And something important is more important than things that aren't.
Yeah.
And so I get your proposition that you're finding value in these classes, but, you know, as a returning student, And, you know, in the context of your argument, I don't know, we have different places in all of this, and I have no intention of going back to school to get a degree. How's this? I was working here for a few years, and I was like, oh, you know what? I'm here on campus. I could just finish up my mechanical engineering degree.
Mm-hmm.
Just take a class every semester.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Like, wait. So, like, on your website, you mentioned, like, teaching a few classes here. Like,
They're in here. This is, like, shop class for smart kids.
Yeah, but, like...
You know.
I'm surprised the universe, like...
I've taught credit classes here without a college degree.
I'm like, surprised in a good way that the university even allowed that. Like...
I think it speaks more to their incompetence than anything else.
Okay. But I mean, the Fortune 200 company didn't do that.
Right. But so there's a big difference between a SFSU and an actual company.
Okay.
I mean, some ladies, like, carriage selling cookies on the street is more of a business than we are.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we get state money.
So I shouldn't be giving them too much credit for this.
Oh my God, like, this place is in no way a functional operation.
Uh-huh.
It were it not for free land and money from the state, there is no way this operation could exist.
Right.
It has no idea what it's doing.
Uh-huh.
Inherently.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it this way. Give out all the credit in the world to some academic that gets a professorship and does research or whatever. Let's assume they're an excellent academic.
Mm-hmm.
We hire them.
Mm-hmm.
On the basis of their publications, their ability to bring in grant money, and their pedigree, let's say. Well, at no point does actual teaching get discussed.
Uh-huh.
Well, it does in a performative way, but they don't care how good of a teacher you are. And that's, that could be said at every higher education institution.
I'm actually kind of sympathetic to that in the sense that like this, like, serious students learn from books anyway.
Sure, but the thing is that ostensibly our job is to teach.
Yeah, but like
everything else, publications, research,
no, but like,
money,
but like
is bullshit.
Well, no, but
it's
no,
not
professors
aligned.
Who do real research, like non bullshit research.
No, I know, but it's not aligned with our job. Our job, first and foremost, is to teach the group of students in the class. Everything else is a bribe to get a smart person to stand up in front of a room of dumb 19-year-olds.
Yeah.
That's why you get a research space. That's why you get some money. You publish to keep your pedigree up. All that bullshit. But
I think
our job
kind
is
of
to
backwards.
Teach. No. They've got it backwards. That's what they're talking about. Our job is to teach. Well, let's say you're a good academic, but you're a shitty teacher. After a few years, let's just say, because my point is further.
Okay.
A few years, you know, you've kind of been at this a while, you start running out of ideas. Well, maybe you should get a job as a department chair.
Because
now you're an administrator. You'll make more money, and it's not really about your ideas anymore. You get to be the fancy face of the department, right? And you're making more money, and you're going to more meetings, right? After a while, that gets kind of whatever. Now you want to be dean, okay? But you didn't study management, and you may not even be managing that department well. You were, let's say, a physics professor.
Yeah.
And now you're in what might be called a management position.
Well,
what do you know about management? You certainly don't have any aptitude. You certainly don't have any real interest in it. Because otherwise, you would have not been an academic, or you would have gone into industry or whatever. Well, now you become a dean. Pretty soon, you're running the school, the university. You're not a manager. At best, you're a physics professor. Yet you're in control of an entire institution with several schools and whatever like that. And in no way are you checked on, are you doing a good job? Because the money keeps rolling in.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you do a good job. in regular business, you can measure profit.
Yeah.
How do we measure our performance here? Well, they figured out a way. It's called graduation rates.
Oh, yeah. That is very corrupt.
Right. So what they do, they learn, because they're not dumb.
Uh-huh.
Well, we need to increase graduation rates.
Uh-huh.
Well, there's one way of doing that that almost any administrator can do. You lower your standards.
Yeah.
Well, we've been doing that for a very long time. Why? Because we don't have people up there that know what our job is. Our job is to teach.
Mm-hmm.
That's our job. That's why I have that room across the way.
Mm-hmm.
Research, publications, that is a bribe. You bribe smart people to stand in front of a room full of dumb people with all those accoutrements. That's how this system is constructed.
Mm-hmm.
People have gotten that reversed. You're not here to do research or publish. You're here to teach. But we don't hire good teachers. And to show we're doing a good job, we have to lower standards. So not only are we teaching horribly,
mm-hmm.
but we're continually lowering standards to keep our graduation rates going up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the system that is before us.
Yeah.
And I forget what point that entered into our discussion, but it's like, that's the world I look at here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to have any part of that. Like, there's no value they're conferring on me there.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And you're here because it's the only game in town?
My story is I fell in love with manufacturing.
Uh-huh.
I love factories and making things. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's America, you know? And granted, there's a lot of Americas, but it's the one I think is really cool.
Yeah.
And I had the poor timing of graduating high school in 1988.
Uh-huh.
Well, Wall Street had discovered by then that you can make a lot of money by taking an okay company and shutting it down and selling it for parts.
Uh-huh.
And you can make a lot of short-term profit that way.
Uh-huh.
And if you do that every year, a couple times a year, if you're in Wall Street as a what we call a vulture capitalist, you can make a really good living for yourself going into towns that have a factory in them and shutting that factory down and putting all those people out of work and selling the IP, selling the branding, selling the tools off, and selling the land.
Mm-hmm.
And even more magical, the government helps them do this by saying, if you'd like to do a deal like that, you can have the company incur the debt that it took you to buy the company, and then after you sell these things and take all the profit, that company can go bankrupt and you don't have to pay the money back.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're looking now at an America that's been spending the past 40 years profiting out of shutting down factories in American capacity. And now they're saying, we don't have manufacturing in America.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you're right, we don't. And that's because all the billionaires that are contributing to your campaign made a lot of money making sure we couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's other parts of that equation. I get it, NAFTA, and the efficient use of labor globally and all that sort of stuff gets in there. But you can't deny that a huge amount of America's industrial capacity across the country was destroyed for vulture capitalists to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's disgusting that nobody talks about this.
I mean, I think people are talking about it now.
No, I don't think anybody's talking about how vulture capitalism works.
The recent tariff thing was about, like...
Oh, they're talking about we don't make things here anymore and make America great again shit.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, there's no acknowledgement in that.
Yeah.
As to why this town in Iowa no longer has the factory it used to have.
Uh-huh.
And sure, that factory may not have been the most competitive factory in the world. But the thing is, that may not be the reason why it shut down. Mm-hmm. It shut down because someone leveraged money against the company to buy it, to sell it for parts, to profit, mm-hmm. and then have the company go bankrupt in court.
Yeah.
And that was a big business for 40 years. And the thing is, nobody's talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very convenient to not talk about that. Both sides of the political spectrum are receiving a lot of money. Like, do you know who Mitt Romney is?
Yeah.
Okay. That's how he made his money.
Yeah.
That's what he did for a living. He shut down factories
mm-hmm.
to make money.
Yeah. So, like, there's this... I mean, ostensibly... So, I do not have the facts on this issue. I don't...
You're not into manufacturing. Sure. That's fine.
Yeah. So I know, like...
Anyway, my argument for why I'm here. I love that shit. But, of course, I came up at a time
uh-huh.
when the job prospects were going down
uh-huh.
in America.
You're holding the fort on American manufacturing by teaching it to
young people. No.
Okay.
No, less and less options. Luckily, I was into racecraft, and I uh-huh. worked around bicycle and motorcycle racing and then auto racing until the bottom dropped out of that.
Uh-huh.
Or I left, got the job here, and then the bottom dropped out of racing.
Uh-huh.
And to me, this is safe harbor.
Yeah.
To me, this is where I get to do these kinds of things that I'm interested in and have some job security, a retirement plan, a pension, you know, like a steady paycheck, benefits.
Yeah.
Versus on the outside, I'd have none of that. I'd just be waiting for the axe to fall.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, that's why I'm here. And ostensibly, there's a lot for students to learn in a room like this. They choose not to.
Yeah.
I was
wondering, like, I liked your poster about, like, spring break, you can complete your projects here. How much take up do you get?
You know what? This was probably the best semester I've ever seen, where I think there were two people that learned to TIG weld
uh-huh.
during that break, and another student who's always here currently. I've been trying some new marketing shtick on students, and it may be working. So we're trying.
That's good.
I'm trying, but you know, I've seen a steady decline in students' interest in real things.
Yeah, I may be like a victim of that or something, in the sense that I was born in 1987.
Well, you can be an academic all you want. That's how's this? If you're a math major or a computer science major,
mm-hmm.
you're not the person I'm pointing to.
Okay.
I'm pointing to you're a civil engineering major, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, maybe physics or whatever,
mm-hmm.
where you might want to actually test one of your experiments or theories.
Yeah.
You might actually want to make the thing you talk about in class.
Yeah.
Well, if you're a mechanical engineer, most of your time not doing homework should be in a room like this.
Right.
Well, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an electrical engineer, most of your time should be in the other room soldering circuits and testing systems,
uh-huh.
but they're not.
Yeah, but just like, so, but like, as, because of my, like, anti-school pro-autodidact ideology, like, I was really excited in principle that you have that poster, like, come to the machine shop during spring break, but I'm not personally going... The reason I'm not personally taking advantage of this thing that, like, I'm so happy that this exists...
Sure.
...is because, basically, I work in bits, not atoms.
Sure. No, so, like, you're just not the person I'm talking to.
Okay.
But the thing is...
But, like, I could have been in a different life.
Sure, we all could have been anything in a different life. But, there's a couple things I'm trying to communicate with that poster.
Yeah.
Not just, I'll be around, you can take advantage.
Uh-huh.
But... I'm also sending a message to other students
uh-huh.
saying, spring break, what are you resting from? Get busy.
Yeah.
You should be working.
Yeah.
If you're in the English department,
You should be blogging.
You should spend all spring break writing.
Yeah.
You should be doing like 30,000 word days every fucking day of spring break.
That's a lot of words.
Or whatever it is. I don't know. Whatever they do.
For me, 1,000 words is a very good day. But maybe I'm just slow.
But you're not an English major.
I write. I write a lot.
I write too. Like, I'm a numbers guy. I'm a hardware guy.
Uh-huh.
I'm about metal.
Yeah.
I fucking write.
Uh-huh.
That's because that's the language that we use to communicate digitally. Yeah. Well, fuck yeah. But the thing is, in the English department, I hold them up to a different standard.
Uh-huh.
Those are people that say words are their fucking game. Well, if words are your fucking game, you should be able to spit a lot of them out, and well. If you're in the cinema department, you should have made 3 fucking shorts over the break, or 1 big one, or whatever. And if you come back from spring break and you didn't make a fucking movie on your phone because it's that fuck, and publish it to YouTube
because
it's that fucking easy, what the fuck are you even doing here?
Yeah.
Like, what you are is what we call, what in America we call a fucking loser, right? Because what you're doing, if you're not doing that, is you're attending school and you're gonna get a diploma and then you're gonna be fucking unemployed or working at Starbucks because you're a fucking loser. But what happens is if you're the writer that wrote whatever it is, 30,000 word days every day of the break.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm quibbling with the specific number.
Sorry, I agree with
the sentiment, whatever. I just think that's a high number.
Sure, okay. it might in fact be. Or if you're the electrical engineer that didn't design 3 or 4 6 circuits.
Yeah.
Or whatever over the break. Or the mechanical that like, yeah, you finally proved your concept and now you're gonna like get it all going and make drawings. If you aren't doing that on weekends, on your breaks, on all these other times you have that you aren't taking class, you're what we call in America a fucking loser. Because that's how you're planning your life.
Yeah.
Because if you come to this school and you just take classes and you get a diploma, you're fucking useless. You cannot do anything. You are valueless. You have nothing to contribute. So that's what I'm trying to say with that sign.
Yeah.
To the other students that may not want to come in here.
Yeah.
And so it's my subversive stuff. I have a few subversive things I'm doing here.
Yeah.
If you notice, there's a group of students talking across the hall. Yesterday, a minor miracle happened. I'm in here trying to get some CAD work done. And they're over there. And I start hearing all this laughter. Loud laughter. And a girl was in there laughing. Boys and girls were in the same room and they were all laughing and having a great time. I hadn't seen this in a decade at least. And they were actually trying to solve a problem over there. And they were doing something. And they were doing it because they kind of have a club going.
Yeah.
It's starting to form. It's primordial right now, but it's starting to form, getting this energy going.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist on this campus.
I'm
trying to have a seed start there.
Yeah.
Yesterday I heard boys and girls laughing together. I couldn't believe it. Today I go in, I'm here, gonna find you, and there you are talking with them about private property rights or whatever.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's like, that's what I'm trying to build here.
Yeah.
And no one gave me permission.
Yeah.
I didn't ask permission.
Yeah. And yeah.
So, you know, we all have our different paths and you know, where does this conversation go now? In a way, it's like, you know, I have my views and being around here, like I've said a couple times already, but you feel like you're sharpening that tool. And that's the best case scenario here.
Yeah.
That someone would come back from come in from the cold, as the spies would say. And here you are sharpening your tool, but then you'll complete this and move on.
Yeah.
And you will have gotten that degree. Now, is it getting the degree that you're finding valuable, or
mostly not? So, like, it's a combination of motives. Where, like, on the one hand, everyone else in my social class has a bachelor's degree, and so, like, okay, so if I weren't, I mean, I mentioned this in the blog post, but like, if they're like, you know, if some of the variables had been different, then finishing the degree would not have been worth it. You know, if, you know, I had to drive instead of taking BART,
And if you felt like this class wasn't exactly as good as you might find it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, my bullshit gen ed courses are, like, those parts I'm just doing for the degree. But, like, if the math degree happens to be bundled with like three additional gen ed classes, like the package altogether is worth it on net.
Uh-huh. But what makes it, when you say worth it?
I mean, there's a like.
Like, I get that you could be going to these math classes and learning stuff, but in a way, you could audit.
Yeah, so
those classes.
Right. So I have studied on my own.
Sure.
But like, I do like. There's this worry. So you know, okay. So I didn't.
A classroom is helpful for certain types of learning.
And it's also like calibration. So like I didn't finish telling my tragic backstory, but like another part of the tragic backstory is that we were talking about the part at Santa Cruz, but like later there was a later part, and like it's not that interesting of a story, but like there was a later part where like I had been studying on my own for a few years, including math, and I thought, like, oh, why not take a math class at community college just to like, just for fun, you know? And so I enrolled in differential equations at Diablo Valley College. And to my shame and horror, I actually did not do very well. And like there was just this, and it's also this, there's this, so like I think a lot of people might have the preconception that like math is like just one thing, and they're not thinking about it as being like broken down into different subskills.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I think I was in this very weird situation, this non-standard situation where like I had been good at training some subskills but not others. So that like on the one hand, during the differential equations class, like one thing I was very proud of is that like, so the textbook mentioned this method for solving a particular kind of differential equations called exact differential equations. And they demonstrated the method for like two variables. And of course, as a mathematician, like you want to, you know, whenever you see something, you want to generalize it. So like, I was like, I figured out like, oh, this probably works for an arbitrary number n of variables. And I wrote out the induction proof, and like I posted it on like math.stackexchange, and one of the users said like, congratulations, you've discovered a beautiful piece of mathematics. So I was very proud of that. At the same time...
Were they being facetious or were they...
No, they were serious.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Like this wasn't like.
So get your publication citation.
Well, no. So. Well, so this is the thing.
Sure.
There's like many levels of skill.
Sure.
So like there. By real mathematician standards, like.
Oh,
this,
I see what you're saying. Yes.
Yes.
You were doing novel work.
It's not novel. Like it's student work. It's
sure.
Student level work of like someone who is going to be a mathematician someday does this sort of thing while they are young.
Yes. Sure. But passing a class with good grades in college involves other skills.
Yeah. And so it was just this weird situation where on the one hand, I could do that, which most students cannot do.
Sure.
And don't even realize is a thing that you should be trying to do.
Because you've spent a lot of time in your career solving problems of various types.
Well, and because like I had the idea of like... The kind of thing I was doing there is the kind of thing that makes people want to be mathematicians and like prove theorems and not anyway.
Their motivation can be varied.
Yeah, but like at the same time, I was actually doing very poorly in this differential equations class because like subjectively, it felt like I understood the concepts, and then
but you didn't perform on the tests.
Yeah, and like, but like. That's a problem.
In a school, it is. In reality, it's did you solve the problem or not?
Yeah, but like...
Like in the real world, well, are
like,
you able to solve the problem?
Yeah, but like...
What's the problem? Well, the problem is we ain't selling enough apples.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. And if you're affecting a change in that, you're succeeding.
Yeah.
But let's say, if you're successfully helping to sell more apples with whatever your math is,
yeah,
then you're succeeding.
Yeah, but like, I do think there's a sense in which, like, if you think you understand a subject and then you do poorly on, like, on a
college test.
On a college test in that subject, that is a warning sign that something is wrong.
It may be, but that warning sign that something's wrong may be talking about either end of the equation.
Because the test might be bullshit and your understanding was fine? Or
what if the teacher doesn't understand the subject?
Okay, in a lot of humanities courses, I would accept that diagnosis, but like specifically for math,
I understand it's harder to not. How's this? You see that trigonometry thing on the board there?
Yeah.
Most instructors, how's this?
Yeah.
Notice where sine and cosine are.
Okay. Wait.
Exactly. Right. Now, those would be considered non-traditional places to label those.
Mm-hmm.
Most instructors don't understand why that's the case.
I mean, so there was...
And that's the fundamental concept behind all of trigonometry right there.
Yeah.
And they don't understand the correct location of sine and cosine.
Yeah.
Because that's not what was taught to them. So they're teaching what was taught to them, but what was taught to them was an incorrect understanding of the fundamental concept of trigonometry. So that's mathematics. And what I just gave you was an example that I have experienced here where most professors and graduate students can't explain why that's the correct labeling and the way they've always done it is wrong. So that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, but like...
And that's math.
Yeah.
Not just so math, but that's a particular labeled branch of math that people refer to, i.e. trigonometry.
Yeah.
And most of them remain confused on the subject.
Yeah. But like... Okay. The thing I was trying to build towards here was that like, just that like... I have studied outside of school. I intend to continue studying outside of school.
But you're not.
But I want the calibration of like, if I perform well in these graduate level math classes, that is like experiential data to me of like, this is the standard being set by schools on what graduate level study looks like. And so now I have, like, that calibrates how I should approach studying outside of school to meet the same equivalent standard.
I hear you.
Because there's this potential danger of, like, being an autodidact where, like, you read a book, you subjectively feel like, oh, I think I sort of understand this. You attempt a few exercises and be like, yeah, feel like you basically get it. And that's not quite a high enough standard.
I guess when I hear you explain it that way, I wonder, to what end? Like, I guess I try to keep myself, in a way, motivated by the prime directive of engineers.
Yeah.
First, we say, what problem am I solving?
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about it in this sense, it's like, well, I don't want to know math.
Mm-hmm.
I want to solve the problems that are presented to
me. Yeah, sorry. I'm approaching this from a perspective of like, mathematics is actually worth knowing as like...
It is. It's a valuable tool.
But like not...
But I look at it as a tool.
I'm not thinking of it as just a tool.
Right. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But that's when you start beginning an academic pursuit.
I mean, I guess so, but like, I don't want
or a
to
hobby.
Be like, yeah.
It's or a passion.
Yeah.
Where you start devoting more and more of your life toward this, and everyone goes, well, what does this mean? It's useless. And you say, I can't help myself.
Well, it's...
It's a compulsion. Right? And the thing is, like, I look at math and I go, boy, it'd be nice to know all that math, but I'm busy here solving problems.
Right? Yeah, I am.
And
like,
when I need to solve another a problem that involves a certain type of math, I'm going to learn that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to figure out how it's done in service of solving the problem. Now, and I get that your motivation and my motivation are different there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, here's the thing. If you're going to pursue academic level mathematical exploration...
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking for an extrinsic calibration in terms of, am I working at a college level effectively?
Graduate school level.
This graduate school.
Okay.
They're going to call
fair
that
enough.
College level.
Fair enough.
Yeah. No, I mean, college is now high school in America.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But I wonder why it matters if that's what you're trying to do. I hear what you're saying. I get it. I get you're looking for a calibration. Like, I make bikes.
Yeah.
I went to a bike show this weekend. I was looking to calibrate in a way, and maybe this is an analog to what you're saying. Are my bikes really better than everybody else's, or am I full of shit?
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, maybe that's it. And that's why I go there. It's like, am I really doing what I say and think I do?
Yeah.
And when I look around, are others at my level, or what are they doing? And you're looking at that on the mathematics level, and it's like, well, it's a tough crowd. Like, I went to where all the best... I go to where all the best bike people are. This graduate school program is certainly not the best mathematics program.
Yeah, but like...
They're teaching lower-level like, math.
But
right?
the...
I mean, and that, even a graduate school mathematics level in the world of mathematics is lower level math.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not you're not necessarily going to where the real gangsters are.
Yeah.
You're kind of like where the wannabes are. And it's like, okay, now what? And it's like, how do I measure up with the wannabes?
I mean...
But I asked, to what end? Like, what, how, if you're enjoying yourself pursuing math, and you find value in places, like, value in places others don't find value. Like you said, you thought you were doing really good, and then you took the class, and then you weren't doing good. And it's like, is that truly your problem? Or are you putting value in places others don't? Like,
well, no, I do think, like...
And that can be a good thing. I was going to say, with my bikes, because I'm putting value where others don't, I see things they can't.
Yeah. Like, no, I do think, like, the fact that I did poorly in that differential equations class, like, I do think I was doing things correctly that weren't included in that class, but the fact that I was doing things incorrectly that were included in the class is something I wanted to fix. Like...
But for what? For why? Just because they included it? What if that's not the important bit?
That just seems like way too convenient of an excuse.
It is, and it can be an excuse for failure. I'm open to that. I've just been around long enough. Like I used that trigonometry example.
Yeah.
What if that's not what's important? I mean, at some point, as adults, we have to be able to stand up and say, this is how it's going to work. And I'm sure in plenty of parts of your life you do that.
Yeah.
Why suddenly the deference to these people in an academic institution where their motives and what they're trying to do may not be what your motives and what you're trying to
do. Yeah, but like, again, in this particular technical domain, I actually respect the authority, like... I respect that these people know what they're talking about in this specific neuro domain. I do not respect...
Sure.
I do not respect the philosophers.
In the idea of this is how math is taught at a university.
I mean, I don't want to go that, like...
But the thing is that there's... How's this? Math's a big world.
Yeah.
And math can be seen or used in lots of different ways.
Yeah.
The way it's used at a university mm-hmm. is an extremely limited and narrow case.
Mm-hmm.
To say that that particular case is the reference case,
mm-hmm.
that's what I'm questioning. Because the job of a university and what they're doing and what their stated motivations are,
mm-hmm.
or their actual motivations,
mm-hmm.
produce an artifact
mm-hmm.
that may not be representative of what's truly valuable to you in that world, and may not reflect your ability or inability to do adventurous mathematics, so that you're rowing your boat out to the sea alone, and you're going to do battle against the math shark. Or what's the old man in the sea? What fish is he?
I don't know.
Okay. Do you know the old man in the sea?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a big fish, but let's say it's the math fish. Like, what the fuck does a school have to do with the math fish?
Again, so, the...
Because, again, like, just because on, I'm not going to assume you're case... wrong. Like, what if you're right? What if you're just co-opting what is better? Because...
In this case, I don't buy it. For philosophy, I do buy it.
I understand you're not trying to take shorts. Uh-huh. I get it. You're not trying to give yourself an easy out,
uh-huh.
which is commendable. And hopefully we all do.
But based on all of my other studies and all of my other reading and all of my other life experience, like, I think I am capable of distinguishing, like, I think I can make case-by-case judgments on, like, when deferring to an authority figure makes sense and when it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, in the case of, like, my... You know, I'm taking, so as, you know, part of the bullshit gen ed to finish the degree, I'm taking philosophy of animals. And, right. And so there are particular cases where, like...
I'm trying to imagine what that means.
No, it's fine. Like,
sure. I mean, hopefully it's fine.
Because, you know, you talk about consciousness and,
How's this? Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of general education.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of studying, reading, writing, arithmetic, exactly. history, philosophy.
You don't need to tell me.
All that. I'm totally down with all that. What I'm not down with is bullshit, indoctrinational horseshit.
Yeah.
That the only goal is to program you in the way they want.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So, like, in that case, like, there are definitely moments where I'm like, okay, in this particular respect, I am unambiguously a better and more competent philosopher than this particular professor.
Sure.
So, like, in that case...
Right. You just met your match with the math people.
Yes.
Sure. And that may be true.
And, like, also, like, there's also the same... So we mentioned earlier something about, like, math is just, like... It's hard to screw up.
Right, it is. But the thing is, it's hard to screw up because everybody does it the same.
Mm-hmm. But, like, there's also... There's this thing where, like... So in terms of, like... Sorry, I sometimes worry, like, in the context of, like, being at this institution and talking to people, I talk a lot about math stuff because that's the specific thing that I'm here to work on.
That's heating you up, yeah.
The specific thing that I'm here, like, in terms of, like, the grand project of my life and my contributions to our civilization, I actually am much more of a philosopher than a mathematician if you mm-hmm. read all of my blog posts.
Yeah, I think your reasoning is sound. It's
But, like, it's just, like... So, like, my total life, I am much more of a philosopher. It's just that, like...
You're here for math.
Yeah. In terms of, like, what this particular school has to offer me,
mm-hmm.
the philosophy department at San Francisco State University is not actually helpful.
I can only imagine how bad it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Whereas the math department is, like... I respect a lot of these people. I respect a lot of these courses.
Sure. Here's the thing. You're almost done with this.
Yeah.
When you close the door behind you.
Yeah.
Then what?
I still need to figure out my next steps. So, because there's also this thing where, like...
Like, you got your diploma. Now what does it... What... What's the next step? How does that relate to the next step, I should say?
So this is another long story. Because so like there's also this thing where like there's just a lot of assumptions here that I don't know how to unpack quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But like basically like
I'm surprised because you've done so much writing that you would think you would have.
Oh no, I do. Okay, basic like sorry. If I thought like the world was going to continue business as usual for a while, it would probably make like so like there's a, okay there's this I made a lot of money in software.
Good.
So
to you.
Yeah. So like basically, I reached the situation. So like, I like doing intel. So okay, I like working on software. It's great.
Good. That's probably why you made a lot of money.
Yeah, but like, well, but there's all. It's not the thing I like most in the world. Like the thing I care about most is like the kind of intellectual writing that I do and theorizing and philosophy and like.
It's hard to get paid for that.
Exactly.
Sure.
So like programming is like.
I try to tell students what they should be striving for.
Yeah.
Is a vocation that is compelling.
Right.
That it's not boring to show up every day of the year on year after year.
Yeah.
It has value to them, but it doesn't have to be the most important thing to them.
Yeah.
They can play in a rock band, but they're happy to go to work on Monday and work as an engineer.
Yeah.
Pays good. Pays for the house.
Yeah, I do think,
you know?
I do think I made a good decision in 2018 where like I was like looking for a second, a new software job. And like, I was set up to interview with a company that like was working on a more interesting project. They were doing like the machine learning powered Wikipedia or something.
Yeah.
But I had already gotten an offer from an insurance company. And I was like, which like specifically like cyber insurance, where we scan your company's network before selling you insurance. And it sounded like such a sensible business idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, I'm taking this job offer.
Cool.
And like in retrospect, like
good business is good business.
Yeah. So it was a less interesting thing to work on, but it seemed like a more sensible business.
But I'm willing to bet the work itself was not totally unaligned with your interests.
Yeah. But like,
right.
But like the. So I was employee number 16.
Sure.
Another
20,000 or 30,000.
Well, no, there's like 800. But like,
sure.
The
you're doing good.
The stock. So the stock isn't liquid yet, but like theoretically, it should be worth low seven figures.
Cool, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
and so,
awesome.
But like because of that, mm-hmm. like, so that money's not going to last forever.
Of course not.
But like, I can like take some number of years and just do intellectual stuff and not worry about having a day job.
Well, or you could do both. Yeah.
But like
steady income.
Yeah.
Is the key to life. I always want coming in. It's really helpful. It's very dangerous to do.
Yeah,
the
thing. There are risks to the thing I've been doing for the past few years. I acknowledge that.
Right. And yeah, good for you on the money front. It's tricky to passion projects are really great.
Mm-hmm.
They're really wonderful things. I worry when I see people have it take over too much of their life. Just as much as, like on the videos, you see the Kardashians or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All the people with all this money and nothing to do but go
like, I do
shopping.
Have, I do have, so, like...
Sure. I know, I understand. And it's... I don't know what you're trying to do. It's hard for me to say from the outside what your thing is. And I haven't heard everything. And I'm just saying, like, it's really cool to have made good money and continue to make good money in this world.
Because,
like I say, money ain't everything.
Yeah.
But it's really important.
Yeah. But, like, money caps out pretty fast.
Sure, there's a point at which you've earned enough. I get it.
I mean, so, anyway, like, oh, there's this really complicated thing here where, like, me and my friends are kind of worried about, like, the world ending pretty soon, relatively soon.
But that's an easy thought to have.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
The idea, like, of a guy standing in the street with a sign saying the end is near,
yeah,
is a very old idea.
It's a, yeah, but the, like...
Certainly, it looks like the American experiment is coming to an end.
Yeah, and the human experiment might also be coming to an end, unfortunately.
Well, that gets into the end is near concept.
Yeah, well, specifically...
Talk about demographic collapse?
No, not even that one.
Okay.
That's a separate thing.
Okay.
Do you have children?
No, ashamedly.
I'm 37 now, and, like, realizing, like...
You're almost too late. I mean,
thinking about...
As a male, you have more of a time horizon than females.
Yeah.
But females really top out at 35.
Yeah.
It's kind of over at that point. Certainly, if they haven't gotten busy by the time they're 28, they're screwing up.
Yeah.
And I view my life as a screw-up because I didn't have kids. And I would have loved to. I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But we all have different heartaches and sorrows in our lives.
Yeah.
But the thing is that... Anyway, I do not have kids. I wish I did.
Mm-hmm.
Especially... With the demographic collapse stuff
like
coming.
So there's this thing where, like, I'm sort of, like, nervously looking at the demographic collapse news. I'm also nervously looking at the artificial intelligence news.
Yeah, I don't worry too much about the artificial intelligence, even though I grew up with Terminator, you know.
So, like...
How's this? All my tooling, half my bicycle tooling is named... One fixture is named Cyberdyne.
Uh-huh.
The other's named Skynet.
Mm-hmm.
The other is Whopper.
Uh-huh.
And the other is Samantha.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm clued in on the lore.
Well, there's the science fiction lore.
Sure.
There's the science fiction lore, and there's, like, the lore of people who, like,
work around it.
Think that this is a serious thing, not just in fiction but in real life.
Yeah.
And, like, it's a different lore.
I think this has happened many times in our past. The invention of the printing press caused a large percentage of European population to die.
Mm-hmm.
The invention of the printing press. It fundamentally changed Western culture.
Yeah.
And not in the ways of passing down knowledge, but communication of ideas.
Yeah.
That splintered the Roman Catholic Church, that led to several major wars that killed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
We go, isn't it wonderful the printing press was invented?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it is. But if you were alive for the 100 years that followed, you saw war and divisive hellscape ahead of you.
Yeah.
Or around you. And that was when things moved slow.
Yeah.
Now, then we had radio.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had television. Then we had internet.
Mm-hmm.
The end is always near.
Yeah.
And granted, this is an interesting concept, but certainly all those people that go to big office buildings and sit at desks are going to be out of a fucking job.
Mm-hmm.
That's not too hard to imagine. But food needs to arrive. Doesn't matter what you read on the internet, food still needs to show up.
Mm-hmm.
Housing still needs to get built.
Mm-hmm.
Farms need to be planted. Someone needs to run the train and fix it.
Yeah.
AI doesn't solve most of the problems humanity has.
Yet.
No, it won't then either. At some point in time, you need to make some food.
Yeah.
And eat it. And have a house.
And
sure.
Robots.
Oh, yeah. Go to the mall.
Uh-huh.
down in the food court, and it'll make you a cup of coffee.
Yeah, so, but, like, there's, again...
I mean, how's this? I drink coffee every morning.
Yeah.
I have a robot in my kitchen that makes me my coffee every morning.
But, like, there's...
No, but here's what I have to do.
Uh-huh.
I have to empty it.
Yeah.
Wash it out.
Yeah.
I have to put in a filter. I have to fill coffee. I have to put water in it. And I have to set the clock. And then magically the robot will make my coffee for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where we are. And granted, we're getting factories that are much more highly automated. And we're getting a lot of this stuff. But the human part of life doesn't seem to go away in any future I envision. Is it my limited imagination, or is it the fact that we'll figure out something? Nature abhors a vacuum.
Well, right. Nature, exactly. Nature abhors a vacuum, and like if you invent, like again, so this is a long term. So okay,
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
The rumors of my demise have been overstated, type of thing.
Yeah.
Like I don't have too much worry that we're going to go on. I do think America is on shaky ground right now.
Yeah. But there's this thing, like, so, like, another contributing factor to my, like, anti-school ideology was that, like, I had an alternate scene to do my intellectual stuff in.
What was that?
So there was this blog called Less Wrong.
Okay, Less Wrong. I saw some posts that you put there. Is it kind of like Radical Wisdom that was on YouTube, kind of IDW type of stuff?
Not only very indirectly.
What's the Radical Something Wisdom that was the YouTube channel for IDW
know.
Types?
Anyway, there's this intellectual scene I've been part of for like 15 years.
Sure.
Where it's all about like rationality and science and reason and so forth. And
did it fall apart?
No, it's still around. It took some damage. From my perspective, it took some damage in the mid-2010s. But it's still there.
Yeah, Wokistan's done a lot of harm to thinking.
Like, we weathered Wokistan better than... Okay,
better than others.
Our subculture weathered Wokistan, like, much better than a lot of others, but there was still some damage. And in fact, like, this is actually... Again, there's this very... I have an 80,000 word memoir across four blog posts, like telling my whole dumb story of like my fight against, because again, like the trans thing.
What? Okay.
It was just kind of funny because like I'd been in this intellectual subculture had been like my entire life. Like this is what my life is about. Has been like this grand project. Anyway.
Sure. You're a contributor.
Yeah, and so the. It was just really shocking that, you know, around 2016, like, so, you know, I had been living in Walnut Creek, and, like, I moved over to Berkeley to be, like, closer to my internet friends, and, like, I met a lot more trans people and realized, like, wait a minute, because I had assumed that my thing was a different thing. I assumed, like, oh, my thing is just autogynephilia. It's not the same thing as actually being trans. And then I realized, wait a minute, this actually kind of does look like the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just really, really shocking in like the intellectual environment of 2016, where like basically all of the high status people who are locally subculture high status people, I don't know,
within your tribe.
Yeah, within my tribe, all of the tribal elders who I used to trust were basically saying that men could be women by means of saying so.
Men could be?
Men could be women. Okay, not in those words.
Sure, sure.
But like...
It's the lowest bar of your trans versus what we would say the... Like fashion trans versus like lifestyle. Like for real.
Yeah. Like
is that what you're saying?
Well, so like basically... Okay, there... Okay, so you have this tribe, which is like... You know, majority male because of like interest groups, but like, and like a shockingly large fraction of those males are like, you know, transitioning and like claiming to be like a woman in some sense.
Uh-huh.
And like, So, like, one of the very early on in the story, there was this part where, like, Eliezer Yudkowsky, who's basically the founder of the tribe, who, like, okay, the Vexer, he wrote...
I don't know these people, so
you don't know these people. But, okay, basically, he wrote a lot of really, really good essays about, like, science and reason and thinking, and also, by the way, artificial general intelligence is a risk to humanity's survival.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, again, this was, like, back in 2007, where... Like, so, nowadays, a lot of the people worrying about AI are, like, causally downstream of this,
mm-hmm.
and also separately causally downstream of, like, the thing called AI that we have now, despite not yet being an existential risk, is a lot better than what existed at the time.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Right.
So, Eliezer Yudkowsky posted on Facebook, like, I am now over 50% probability that among, like, our mix of people, like, 20% of the ones with penises are actually women. Which is just, like, what the fuck does that even mean?
That's a very odd thing to do.
That's a very odd thing to say, and it's a very odd thing to say coming specifically from someone whose entire brand is about, like, super, super rigorous logical thinking.
And have you checked the facts here? No, you haven't at all?
Yeah.
Therefore, what are you saying?
Yeah, and so, like...
Sure. I think, you know, the world's gone a little bit mad on the trans thing. It's
mm-hmm.
hard for me to... You know, you speak from a very different perspective than I speak.
Mm-hmm.
I consider myself certainly not trans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much a straight white male on
mm-hmm.
the spectrum. I'm pretty over here.
Yeah.
Close to the edge. I mean, it's a spectrum, so
yeah.
Let's assume I'm not a full one.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty darn close to one.
This is the interesting thing that, like, people used to understand about transsexualism that has been, like, buried for political reasons. Is that so there's this idea that specifically among MTF, FTM is, like, less well understood.
Right, that's a whole
There's, like,
thing.
Two...
Sure.
For among MTF, like, there's actually... It's not actually one thing. There's two different things. There's, like, very...
You're saying M to F.
Yeah.
Okay.
Among that, there's, like...
Two groups.
There's two groups where, on the one hand, you have, like, males who have just been, like, very effeminate, like, their entire lives.
Sure.
Basically, the far right tail of feminine gay men
right.
sometimes
right.
transition to become transsexuals. And then, on the other hand, you have the guys...
Which I worry is a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, on the other hand, you have what might be a much more egregious mistake of the men who, in previous generations, would have been called transvestites, who are actually not gay and not actually naturally feminine, but just, like, there's that thing of, like...
Oh, okay. That didn't go where I thought it was, because not being a trans person and not being part of that community... And,
yeah.
I mean, we've had trans students. We've got two next door.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, it's like... Whatever, everybody's got their thing. But I would assume that there was another group. That there are people that have severe dysphoria.
Well, so
that in the sense that this isn't about wearing women's clothing
mm-hmm.
so much as a very deep identity thing in such a case. Like when you say very effeminate gay
yeah.
men.
Yeah.
When I think of that example,
uh-huh.
I think they're men.
Yeah.
They're gay men.
Yeah.
Their effeminateness
uh-huh.
is not the same as being a woman.
Right.
That's what I think there.
Yeah.
Now, when you say transvestite in this context of this conversation,
yeah.
where effectively a straight man,
mm-hmm.
maybe effeminate, wearing women's clothing,
mm-hmm.
to me, that doesn't even enter the radar when I think of trans. Right?
This has changed, though, right?
Well, I don't know, because
yeah,
I'm not
okay.
part of these worlds, but the
okay.
thing is, to me, when I think of a straight man wearing women's clothing,
yeah,
I don't think trans.
Exactly.
And it's like that,
you
but maybe I'm just old school.
Yeah, basically.
But I do think that there must be this group
yeah,
that's
basically,
really got some issues, and maybe for them, gender reassignment is really the right thing. But the thing is, I think that's an exceedingly small group.
Yeah, so, like, basically, So basically, my first the political project of like the last 8 years of my life has been like basically so like the view you're expressing here that you didn't even realize was like not even the most fashionable view these days.
Like, oh, I'm definitely out of fashion, whatever it is.
Right, but like basically, I think like the older view is more correct. And, like,
I think so.
Resembles reality more.
Well, that's the problem with Wokistan.
Yeah.
Is that Wokistan has nothing to do with living in reality.
Right.
Whether you're talking about feminism or trans or whatever, it's like, it's not about the real world or real people, I think.
Yeah.
It's almost a cartoon.
Yeah.
And I don't look to them to, like, guide me in any way because they're so off.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have plenty of, like, I mean, my father was gay.
Yeah.
I had to learn that. And he was a very particular kind of gay man.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was young, and he didn't come out and say it.
Mm-hmm.
We had to figure some shit out.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, when I was going through adolescence,
mm-hmm.
I had to actually learn what it meant to be gay,
mm-hmm.
to understand my father and what was going mm-hmm. on around me. And I learned one thing about gay people.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing. Gay people like to fuck people of the same sex mm-hmm. as them. And that's where the description ends.
Uh-huh.
Anything more you attach to that is fucking bullshit. You, if you're gay,
mm-hmm.
like to have sex with the same sex as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That is the end of the description. If you assign anything to effeminate, being effeminate.
Well, but that's like sometimes I mean, they're, but like, so there's this tricky thing about categories where like, you can, oftentimes it makes sense to like define a category in terms of a discrete black or white thing, but there are also like things that statistically go along with it that are also part of why the word is, the category is so useful for making sense.
Well, there's a bell curve. And the thing is, it's like if you drew a bell curve, it's like I've had friends and known people that were special forces soldiers.
Yeah.
That were gay.
Yeah.
And were way more macho than I'm ever going to be.
Yeah.
As well as other dudes that are so femme, it's annoying how femme they are. And they're gay.
Yeah.
And there's a whole spectrum because that's what it is. And yes, you could probably say they kind of lump around the middle. But the thing is, it's like, that's the problem with being gay, is that when you say gay, you're talking about this a spectrum of the entirety.
Yeah.
And the one thing they have in common is they like to fuck people of the same, have sex, sexual relations with the people of their own sex.
Yeah.
And any other descriptor will fall flat on its face eventually. There are outliers.
Yeah.
But then there's just like a true spectrum. I've known plenty of gay dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Or way more macho than me.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm not especially macho though. But the thing is that it's just not a very good thing to do when you do that. And then when we talk about trans mm-hmm. in this particular case, trans right now it's a really problematic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been paying attention. I've listened to various voices.
Mm-hmm.
From Jordan Peterson to Sam Harris
mm-hmm.
to Eric and Thing Weinstein
mm-hmm.
and various other thinkers and stuff like that, talking about various different problems within all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say right now, and especially when you get into the political and economic issues
mm-hmm.
where the gay rights movement needed a new product.
Yeah.
The product is trans.
I have written about this.
Yes. And that's super problematic. And then you get into like when you're talking about F to M, when you talk about teenage girls and their behaviors and internet and things like that and social contagions and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, and then you get into like Wokistan and like liberal politics and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into the problem of like, in large part, mm-hmm. young boys are being trained to be girls.
Yep.
In our society.
Yeah.
Because there aren't men around them in any real way. Like, what's the statistic that there are more women flying fighter aircraft percentage-wise than there are men teaching kindergarten?
Mm-hmm.
That statistic. And that's telling. It's saying young boys don't have male influence or male culture in their life, in large part.
Mm-hmm.
So they lean on female culture a lot. And blah, blah, blah. There's a thousand other things that are clouding all this that I think in the modern context, when we talk about a person being gay,
mm-hmm.
it's far less clouded. Like, if you're a gay construction worker
mm-hmm.
and you box as a hobby
mm-hmm.
and go hunting and fishing,
mm-hmm.
most people in the current era, whatever, where you lie in the spectrum, are like, oh, yeah, yeah, he's some gay dude.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not even a whatever, but in the world of trans, everything is so twisted up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, worse, the very worst part of trans world, and this mm-hmm. is, obviously, all of this is my perspective,
yeah.
coming not from the inside, is passing.
Uh-huh.
Because I think within that world, your ability to pass is the currency of the day. And boy, if you can't pass, you're at a different level.
Yeah.
And I think there's a classing of within trans, maybe within their community, but the thing is, or I shouldn't say community, within that group, but certainly as others see it, if you're a biological male mm-hmm. and you can walk into a room and pass as female, you are graded at a different point on the curve.
But, I mean, this seems kind of inevitable.
Well, it's just, maybe it's a world that females have lived in all their life.
But my objection is basically that, like, it's problematic to, like, have all this cheerleading to tell, like, guys like me, like, hey, you know, you want to be a girl? You can just do that.
When, it's really problematic.
When it's not true. Like, it's just literally not true.
Right.
The fact that it's so hard to pass is, like, downstream of it not being true.
Sure, sure. No, I understand someone who's authentically going through something real,
uh-huh.
the idea of passing isn't one of their primary things. I think that's something that may affect them over time.
Mm-hmm.
But like you're saying, if you're not trans, and people are saying it's easy to do and you should do it, and blah, blah, blah. Imagine if you were in a very unstable mental place.
Yeah.
Imagine if you were teetering on the edge.
Yeah.
And this pushed
you. I was actually...
Right.
I was actually 5150'd in early 2017.
Yeah. You're the face of...
Downstream of, like, everyone I trusted in this incredibly smart, incredibly philosophically sophisticated tribe, like, had bought into this idea that, like, men could be women. And I just didn't... I don't think it's true. It's just literally not true. You mentioned this idea of people who are going through something real, and like the shocking thesis of the two-type typology, which I'm like not as all in on as I was in 2017, but I still think it's a good first approximation.
What do you mean by that? Boys are boys, girls are girls.
No, two-type typology is that among MTF, there's the feminine gay ones, and then there's the transvestites, and like these are two different. These are two.
They no one's different. Talking about a third group.
I mean,
that's what confuses me.
Yeah. So this is
because I'm perfect. Like, yeah. I think most people. I mean, it's my perspective.
Yeah. So,
but most people that are dialed into this trans thing shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
I think most of what I see that there's a better way for you to experience this in your life, but I'm also one to say there are people that exist that certainly the best course of action is for them to live their life.
Yeah. So anyways, there's this hypothesis that I was like very confident of in 2017. I'm less confident now, but I still think it's a much better approximation than people get it credit for. Uh-huh. That like a lot of the people who have developed a self narrative around like I have something real going on. This is like actually my true gender. Are actually people like me who are less self-aware about what the thing actually is. Uh-huh. Which is kind of a mean thing to say, but like I think there's actually...
Sometimes mean things are said.
I think there's a surprisingly compelling empirical case for this.
Sure, and it's not helped when you live in a... or when you're in a culture that says... whatever you say is true.
Yeah.
Like, you saying you're a flower makes you a flower. I mean, that's the whole Tumblr thing.
Yeah.
Where, oh, you say you're a flower, therefore you're a flower. Well, it's like, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that you can't be trans. I'm not saying you can't live as a woman. But
it's
the thing
a
is,
lot
it's like,
less practical because it's not...
Like, well, sure, it's not biologically true, but it might be a rational thing for you to do if you're in a certain place. But the thing is, it isn't as simple as just saying it.
Yeah.
You have to live your life that way.
Yeah.
Like, you have to make real changes.
So I did...
And I'm not talking lopping parts off. I'm talking all the other stuff more mm-hmm. than that. I think people focus too much on that.
So I did experiment with hormone replacement therapy for 5 months in 2017.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, I was very adamant, like, no, I'm not transitioning. This is a gender-themed drug experiment.
That's hilarious. It's just a gender-themed drug experiment. You know, because I was just listening to Sam Harris this morning. He's talking about running from his house in the fires.
Yeah.
And that he grabbed, like, I can't remember, his laptop, a bottle of Molly pills,
mm-hmm.
and a handgun. Mm-hmm. Like, and they were talking about the choices of things he decided to take with him.
Uh-huh.
And a bottle of Molly and a handgun
uh-huh.
are very interesting things for someone like Sam Harris to be taking and discussing that. But a gender, you know, because everyone's into the whole drug experiment stuff
uh-huh.
these days with either Molly or it's the ones that all the tech bros like these days. Oh, God. The one that helps them think stuff.
Adderall.
There's that. No, but I'm talking about the one that they're all into. Anyway, but a gender-themed one is a
new
concept.
Yeah, in general, I'm very concerned. Like, I don't do drugs.
Sure.
I'm scared of caffeine these days.
It's wise.
This what, you know, spironolactone and estrogen, I had to try.
Sure.
I had to try.
It was aligned with where you were at.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, I had been thinking about this stuff for a very, very long time.
Okay. And then what became of that?
I mean, after 5 months, I was like, yeah... This is not some, like...
Did you feel a way that you didn't want to be feeling?
No, it's just, like, it's just sort of medical conservatism
okay.
of, like, you don't, like...
You got over the fact of needing drugs.
There was an... Okay, because of this, like, lifelong gender mystery, like, it was something I had to try, but, like, given that I'm not...
You're not trans.
Given that... Well, I mean, I think I kind of
okay.
am. Given that I'm not
that far over the spectrum.
Yeah. Given that I'm not transitioning.
Sure.
It doesn't make sense to be taking these drugs for the rest of my life.
Uh-huh.
And if I'm not going to be taking the drugs for the rest of my life, maybe it's like the 5 month mark is like
uh-huh.
a place to stop and say, okay, I did
sure.
the experiment.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It left a mark.
Okay.
And...
But did you gain anything from it?
I think, like...
Or you're just more okay with who you are now?
It was worth trying.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I didn't actually notice that much psychologically, which was, like...
Interesting
negative data point in that, like, a lot of people say that they feel very different. I did not feel very different.
Right. It's hard for me to understand, you know, all the thinking of it. And then it just could just be me looking at it rationally or from the outside. But I would think that the and this is a body-brain alignment thing, but the thing is, it's like, I think that if you're changing your drug production in your body, that the way your brain responds to those drugs, because I refer to myself as a drug addict, in the sense that I'm addicted to adrenaline. And endorphins are in there too. And all these naturally produced drugs in our body, I think, are wonderful things to be addicted to. And we are, I think, most of us. But, like, say you're switching up the drugs that your body's producing, or the scale, that would produce a result in your brain that would be a benefit of sorts if that's helping. The problem is, because I'm looking at the outside, I think for some people that talk about their transitioning and their dysmorphia type stuff, that it's a brain-body misalignment.
That's the story people tell themselves. I don't buy it in a lot of cases.
And my thing is, I'm charitable, and I can only say, well, I guess if that's what you're feeling. And yeah, see, that's the thing. It's like you've talked more about this and with other people and looked into it more, and probably certainly with a different set of eyes, that where I say, oh, that must be a thing, that there is a misalignment of brain and body. And you're saying, well, maybe that's not a thing.
I don't buy it. And I mean, there is a thing, but I don't think the thing is what people are saying that it is. I think it's the thing. Again, Anne Lawrence used the phrase, men who love women and want to become what they love. And, like, I think there is a thing, there is a very powerful emotion that a lot of people are, like, being socialized to interpret as a brain-body mismatch, when that is not actually a good objective description of what's actually going on. And this is a controversial thesis, and I'm actually less confident in this. I'm less confident of the details now than I was in 2017.
Have you written about this particular argument that you're making?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can send you the links later.
No, I'm just wondering, because if you've written about it, that means you've really gone through the exercise of rationalizing it in a clear.
Well, but in terms of, like, the culture war fight in my tribe. Like, the shocking thing, the really, really just, like, completely, utterly outrageous thing was that, like, this particular psychological theory wasn't even the crux.
To use the expression that's popular on the other side, speaking it is verboten.
Yeah. Well, because like at the beginning, I thought I was trying to argue for this, like, specific empirical thesis about how male to female transsexualism works, and, like,
a rational approach.
Yeah. Well, but this is a complicated empirical thesis about, like, psychology is difficult, right? It's complicated. You know, if someone, like, honestly disagreed with me about the merits of this particular empirical psychology thesis, like, that in itself would not be that horrifying and shocking to me.
Right, right.
But
it's
like
just an argument.
What was horrifying and shocking was that, like,
you got ostracized.
No, not even that. So, like, here's the funny thing about this crowd. Like, they're too good at free speech norms to, like, directly ostracize you.
Right, right.
But they... Is that alarm bad?
Hold on. You usually get those with fire. He must be downstairs. He's not in the hall. Yeah, he must be downstairs. They did it by other means.
Yeah,
they were coercive in some way.
Well, so the argument... There's this philosophical argument. So, because, again, these are very smart people.
Sure.
These are very sophisticated people. So the argument...
And they like to win arguments.
Yeah. So the argument that became popular was, like, okay, well, categories aren't, like, inherent in the world themselves. Like, we define categories to, like, make sense of our experiences.
Fair.
So, like, yeah, that part is fine. And so there's this idea that, like, okay, we can choose to define the category boundaries of men and women such that trans people are their designed gender with respect to these redefined categories.
Do backflips, as they say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, it turns out, like, this is kind of epistemically crazy, but, like, explaining exactly why it's crazy is actually kind of subtle and technical.
Sure. I mean, but here's the thing. I mean, this is the inherent thing about trans.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in large part, if you aren't trying to use... resources that weren't assigned at birth, so to speak. I'm trying to figure out the right language. There's better ways of saying it. But effectively, if you aren't trying to go into a different bathroom, mm-hmm. and if you aren't trying to compete with women on an athletic event,
yeah,
there's some boundaries where trans is an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Prison spaces, yeah. Women's only spaces, athletics,
yeah,
where trans presence can harm women.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, this is the turf type,
yeah,
of thing. But outside of those arguments and spaces,
yeah,
what does it matter?
I mean, for me,
you know, like, why?
Well, for me, like, it's a very practical. For me, like, it's a very like. I mean, it matters a lot to me because, like, I actually have to make this decision, right?
No, but like, it's okay. There's who you are,
uh-huh,
in your entity, your,
yeah,
body.
Yeah.
It's who you are in your mind.
Yeah.
And that's who you are among society.
Yeah.
And, like, do you need to be called a certain thing, or can you just be who you are? Is something preventing you? Is there something you're trying to be called that you're not called right now?
No.
Then is there a problem? I mean, this is, in your case, there's no problem currently, really.
Yeah.
Other than just how do you intellectualize who you are?
Yeah, it is just, like, very, very striking that, like, so, like, my thesis is that, like, people who are otherwise like me in a lot of ways, but born, like, 5 or 10 years later...
Sure.
These days...
are transitioned.
Are trans.
Yeah.
And, like...
I'm willing to bet, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, it's just... I think...
You're worried about harm.
I think the old culture made a lot more sense in a lot of ways.
And certainly, there's places the old guard had it right. There's certain places... You know, you must know about Chesterton's fence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things.
Yeah.
And I think we've lived through a time period, and especially amongst, if you're in Berkeley,
yeah,
a certain social and political type of environment where it became very cool for quite a long time to, mm-hmm, say there are no rules, we're tearing down all the fences.
Mm-hmm.
We're tearing them down before we even get close enough to even see what kind of fence it is.
Yeah.
And we're finding, in large part within our society, that those fences did exist for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It really helped us in some ways to have these fences up.
Mm.
The problem is, in a lot of ways, on the left, they've already torn those fences down.
Yeah.
And building is harder than breaking. That's something, as a young boy,
mm-hmm,
I don't know what your experience was, but amongst my crowd,
mm-hmm,
you find out when you're a young boy that you can affect the world in a great way,
mm-hmm,
by breaking things, destroying things.
Mm-hmm.
You can vandalize something, and thus you've affected the world. Mm-hmm. And it was easy. Because breaking shit is, mm-hmm, easy. This is the Trump administration right now.
Yeah.
They're breaking the government that it took us over 300 years to build.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever year, however many years it is. Mm-hmm. But we've been building this for 300 years. He's going to have it fully broken before 1 year's up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's easy. It was hard to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And all these social fences... have existed or have been created over the period of thousands and thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
so that we're benefited as a society. And yes, of course, there are certain fences that hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain fences that maybe we do need to tear down,
mm-hmm.
or did need tearing down. Problem is, it became really cool just to fucking tear fences down.
Mm-hmm.
And no one ever had much of a discussion about why the fence might even be there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is a problem for the left currently. Problem is, it's a contagion, and the right now,
yeah,
is not a conservative movement. It's a authoritarian movement.
Mm-hmm.
So they're breaking things, because that used to not be what the right used to be, a conservative movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted everything to stay the same, but right now, they're changing things.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to make it authoritarian. And that's going to be the way of control. Because you could argue, in a way, that conservative thought was broken by the left.
Yeah.
Too many fences got broken down so that we didn't...
Yeah, so like...
There was no conservatism to be...
Yeah, I pay attention to a lot of like far-right intellectual thinkers.
I try to be the center-right.
Okay. But like the... I mean, one of the...
Noah Feldberg?
I don't know.
Is that his name? He does... I can't remember, but... He's more of a center right.
Yeah, but like one of the arguments they would make is like, yeah, well, how much has the reason they support this new project, is, you know, like, yeah, well, how much has your conservatism actually conserved?
Sure.
Like,
right. Yeah, you could argue that. Doesn't seem like anything's been conserved.
Mm-hmm. So like.
Even though we...
So, like, these people are explicitly reactionary and not just conservative.
Well, I just don't... I mean, I don't think Donald Trump represents conservatism in
right.
any way.
Yes.
I mean, it's simply an authoritarian movement. And it could be a rational explanation that conservatism...
Well, yeah, it, so there was actually the... there was this... For the first couple months of the new administration, like among the right leaning people in my Twitter circles, who I pay attention to, like there's this very brief moment of like good cheer, like we beat the left.
Well, sure.
And then,
but that's just dunking.
Yeah, and then I think like with the. I mean, this was especially noticeable after the tariff war and the subsequent market correction. Like, a lot of people are suddenly like, well, this isn't great.
Yeah. Yeah. The tricky
people who were willing to support Trump as a weapon against the left rather than because they actually liked Trump,
sure,
are starting to realize
they got what they bought. Yeah.
They're having some buyer's regret.
Sure. Sure.
And so in my case, I did not vote for Trump. I voted for Chase Oliver.
Right.
But like, I was a little bit tempted. Like, I'm ultimately glad I checked the Chase Oliver bubble, so I'm not complicit in the thing that happened. But I will admit I was tempted.
I hear you. I mean, a lot of people were in this position. I'm certain... Like, did you ever see... who's the guy that makes... Who made Roger and Me, the documentarian guy?
Michael Moore.
Did you ever see his speech prior to this 2016 election?
Yeah, I think I saw that one.
Right. He predicted it precisely.
Yeah.
What was going down. And I can excuse somebody that voted for Trump on the first round.
Mm-hmm.
For all the reasons Michael Moore states.
Uh-huh.
But... We truly did, because before that, we had no example of what it meant to have Trump in government.
Yeah.
He had never held office.
Yeah.
In any way. And these people wanted to fucking exact some revenge or anger or whatever.
Yeah.
And then we got to see what it meant to have Trump in office.
Yeah, and I think so. I think some people like might have learned the wrong lesson from that, because they think like, okay, we had a first Trump administration and it didn't.
It didn't end the world.
You know, so they thought like, a second, you know,
sure.
A second Trump administration will be like that. It won't be so bad.
But the thing is, I mean, because you can argue that the 2020 Trump voters,
yeah,
were saying, let's keep more of this. And I don't think a good person could come away from that first term and think, let's have more of this. So I have a problem with a Trump voter in 2020. I have a problem with the opposition party that ran a terrible candidate that almost lost to Donald Trump. That's how bad he was. Think of this. Hillary Clinton was such a terrible, terrible person, candidate for president. She lost to Donald Trump. How's this? Joe Biden was such a terrible candidate. He almost lost to Donald Trump. And what's her name? The one that just went, that everyone's already forgotten. Was so bad.
Yeah.
She lost to Donald Trump, and he was 8 years older than when he lost. Hillary Clinton lost to him.
Yeah.
That's how bad she was as a candidate.
Yeah.
And I can understand that you'd be more interested in voting for Trump after the Biden term, because Biden didn't come away from that making Democrats look like a much better party than Trump. They did plenty of terrible stuff.
Yeah.
And certainly for certain voters poured fuel on their fire. For me, I was incensed by what Biden had done. And Harris made it look like it was only going to get worse.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I think Donald Trump again is a good thing.
Yeah.
We have a serious problem that we're presenting only the worst possible options.
Yeah, so like I had some optimism. I was cautiously optimistic that people like J.D. Vance and Elon Musk would exert a good influence on the new administration.
That's rational.
And I am feeling five months later, I am feeling less optimistic about that.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone with a brain would feel too optimistic about what's going on. No matter... How's this? Imagine you're part of the Federalist Society. And you're a conservative.
Yeah.
And you've been working on trying to, like, make America great again the old-fashioned way. And look at what you're confronting now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think if you're a Federalist, you're too happy right now. Unless your only reason for being part of the Federalist Society was to do away with abortions nationally. And I don't think that's the fundamental reason why people are members of the Federalist Society.
Yeah.
You know? But granted, that's going away as a right simply because the Democratic Party didn't believe in it in the first place. You know? Otherwise, we would have a constitutional amendment. You know, just like we don't have a
ERA. Those are hard to pass.
Well, they are hard to pass, and they should be. You don't want people changing the Constitution willy-nilly, but they never passed the ERA. You know, I was talking about this long before that bullshit that Biden was trying to pretend at the end. But the thing is, it's like, why hasn't the ERA passed? Well, fucking A, what a failure there. And not that I'm perfectly aligned with the ERA. I can't even remember what the exact points are. But the thing is, what were you, two states away from a constitutional amendment? And you fucking blew it? Like, damn. Like, that's failure. And the fact that there was no effort to do a constitutional amendment for women's abortion, yet they kept referring to it as a right, and it was like, that wasn't a right. There's not even a federal law.
Yeah.
To make their lives easier, they leaned back on precedent rather than law. And it blew up in their face, as it should have long ago. And it's like, so wait, you spent 50 years not passing a fucking law? Fuck you, people. It's just crazy. So we're dealing with dumb and dumber, not dumb versus smart people here.
Yeah.
American politics is tragic. But we're getting exactly what we're voting for.
Well, this kind of seems like an argument against democracy.
Well, there's plenty of good arguments against democracy. I mean, come on. I mean, since time immemorial.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but Ben Franklin. I think it's Ben Franklin.
A republic if you can keep it.
Well, there's a republic if you can keep it, but I think he also said democracy is one of the worst forms of governments, except for all the others.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's Franklin. But certainly we're in republic if you can keep it. And I think we've lost the republic. Well, we've certainly, with Trump, lost the republic. When you talk about a country ruled by laws, not men.
Mm-hmm.
And we just found out that we're no longer a country ruled by laws. Which breaks my heart. I've been a proud American all my life and thought that America had something special, and seeing that wasn't a popular opinion breaks my heart. But hey, if we focus only on problems in the world, we're in trouble. Because there's music and poetry, too. We're not starving to death. Most of us have roofs over our head, even if they're temporary roofs. And we're living the best quality of life humans have ever lived. Your wealth is unknown by pharaohs. Your wealth?
Yeah.
Right. How's this? If you get hit by a car, they're going to rush you to the hospital and put you right back together again.
Mm-hmm.
That's science fiction from 200 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, there are some bad things, and there's some problems. But what I try to inspire with students is take advantage of our privilege. And in this case, I'm trying to use the word privilege correctly.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the left knows what the word privilege means. But in this case, our privilege of being the most wealthy, technologically advanced, knowledgeable humans that have ever lived,
mm-hmm.
It's up to us to make this world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're trying to. I mean, you're expressing plenty of ideas. You're trying to do something. It sounds that agrees with you in this mathematical process. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, leading by example.
Mm-hmm.
What if all these students suddenly started pursuing their majors the way you are this math, your math major?
I mean, you probably saw the post, but I organized the Putnam exam here last semester.
The what?
The Putnam exam.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I thought that's strange because it's so misaligned with this university.
It was worth trying.
Right. It's over my head too, because I don't know anything about that kind of stuff, but it's yeah, we tend not to do that kind of stuff here, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with the fact that we never do, because I wonder.
Well, so like it's just that like the, I mean the talent pool here is not very deep.
You know what?
I have grown into the sort of person who like realizes like, hey, we should organize the Putnam exam here. I am not the native talent who actually scores points on the Putnam exam, unfortunately.
Sure, but I've learned enough about this world that it's not who's the best, it's who shows up.
Uh-huh.
And competing
mm-hmm.
isn't about winning.
Mm-hmm.
You have to try to win. You should be trying to win. But that's not what competition is about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about this. How many people run the Boston Marathon? 30,000? 40,000?
Yeah.
How many people win?
One.
Right.
Two. One for each sex category.
Well, maybe three now. But the thing is that Who shows up the second year if only two people win? There's another reason why people are running the Boston Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you can look at a lot of these cases where if only one or two people stands on top of the box, yet all these people are showing up to do it, there's something going on there. Something important.
Mm-hmm.
Something that isn't necessarily about being on top of that box. It might be about being on top of your own box. And in that, looking at the argument from that perspective, sure, we don't have the brightest students here.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the most talented by definition. They'd be somewhere else. But that's not necessarily why you compete.
Yeah.
It's with the, you don't compete with the expectation that you must be the person at the top of the box. So for that reason, I think there's something else that's fundamentally wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
That it doesn't happen.
Well, but there's, but like, for example, so, but like, in terms of like my like natural like so I did get into UC Santa Cruz out of high school. And like they do the Putnam.
Okay.
So like, I don't know.
Right. What's the difference?
Like, what's the difference between the schools, or?
Well, it's just like, what is it that makes one place do it and one place that not do it?
I mean, so,
how's this? This room largely sits vacant.
Uh-huh.
All week. From my expectations, given the size of the student body in both electrical and mechanical engineering,
mm-hmm.
and even civil,
yeah.
you would expect this room full week long.
Yeah, like...
Yet they're not here.
Yeah.
There's something fundamentally wrong. The problem isn't that I'm not here, I am.
Mm-hmm.
The problem isn't that I don't know what I'm talking about. In most part, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they're not showing up.
Yeah.
It's not important to their professors or the students. I think in many ways, it's not important to the professors. Mm-hmm. See, there's a problem I think our professors fail our students in that they're bad teachers. I think that our students fail our professors because they're bad they're bad learners.
Yeah.
Those two happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Is what we have here. And I think at another school, we used to be a really good department.
Uh-huh.
Physics and astronomy here.
Uh-huh.
This used to be a really good department on campus. We're not anymore.
Like, have you just seen that decline since 2005?
I've seen the decline.
Okay.
And the thing is that I've seen other departments kind of get back together again.
Mm.
Like, they've kind of fixed some of their problems. Not entirely. But, uh-huh. I mean, they still have to socially promote student and graduate undeserving students.
Uh-huh.
But they've made their departments a bit better than they used to be.
Uh-huh.
So it could be that at that time, the UC Santa Cruz math department was energized in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
What if they're not energized that way now? You know, what if that was just tradition.
Yeah.
And that tradition broke down and then nobody kicked
started again. I don't even know, because like, again, at the time, I thought I was going to major in philosophy because I didn't know anything.
Sure.
I'm happy with what I'm doing now. I do have sort of, like, it's... I have this anti-school ideology that I'm still pretty passionate about, but, like, this past semester, as I'm, like, actually respecting my current courses, like, it's also mixed with this sense of, like, should have done this 15 years ago.
Oh,
yeah. Now that I know how to try and why to try.
Yes, but that's just growing older.
Yeah.
In many ways. I mean, here's the thing. I don't disagree fundamentally with the concept of school.
Yeah.
I would just like you to show me a school that's worth me going to.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, I mean, I can't afford to just survey some schools.
Mm-hmm.
But I know one thing. This school's terrible. It's a shitty
but
school.
Like, there's also, but like, there's also this thing of like...
You might have a good teacher.
Yeah, but like...
But I not a si- the system is broken.
I'm not, like, the way I'm... I think I'm getting benefits out of it in a way that doesn't depend on the system. Like, I don't I already don't expect the system to help me.
Sure.
So like I'm there because like the you know the
right, here's my argument.
Yeah.
Yes, you're stoked and it's working out for you. Good.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Stoked for you. What I'm thinking about is a student that comes out of high school not knowing shit.
Yeah.
And we monetize that, and by the time they leave, they still know shit.
Yeah. And that's why, so, like, one thing that, like, so last night I got an email, I got an announcement from my Philosophy of Animals professor.
The what?
Philosophy of Animals.
Oh, yes.
Who, announcing that, like, the midterm is being delayed because on Thursday, there's the, you know, defend higher education protests, and he, and, like...
That's a reason to cancel class.
And also, furthermore, you get an extra credit point for submitting a photograph of yourself at the event.
That is childish.
Yeah.
That is kindergarten level instruction.
I was actually going for corrupt rather than childish, but yes, that too.
It's certainly corrupt. How's this? Holy crap.
Yeah. Well, no, so like it's only like...
The only thing worse would be showing a movie during class.
Uh-huh.
Which is done a lot.
The thing that I was offended by is just the, like, you can't, like, even if it's just a symbolic one point of extra credit, that's not very much. Like, there's this principle that, like, you should not be using your position as a professor to award credit, to, like, incentivize students to do outside of classroom political activity that you approve of.
This school mandates political indoctrinational classes.
Yes.
They mandate it to graduate.
Yeah.
It's a requirement here that you be indoctrinated to a certain point.
Yeah.
That's the thing. What this professor is doing is entirely aligned with the people that make decisions here. And it's terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, any rational adult looks at this as terrible. And I it's just every time I hear a new thing about a different thing happening on another part of campus around there, I'm disgusted to an even greater level. But the thing is, it's like, I'm willing to entertain the idea that there are actually some good teachers here.
Uh-huh.
They will have gotten here entirely by accident,
mm-hmm.
and they are probably not approved
mm-hmm.
to be good teachers by the administration.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing it anyway. They must exist. We have enough teachers in this school where statistically there have to be some.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully you got some of them.
Yeah. Well, but like also like the... But like this thing about like incentivizing outside of class political activity, like I cannot imagine a math professor doing that.
I work in the physics and astronomy department.
Okay.
I get to hear things at department meetings.
Uh-huh.
And I also go to the college meetings.
Uh-huh.
College of Science and Engineering.
Mm-hmm.
It's unimaginable what level the faculty are working at in the current era.
Uh-huh.
In terms of the things that I've heard said.
Uh-huh.
By people that teach physics.
Okay.
By people that teach math.
Okay.
By people that teach chemistry and biology. I can't imagine what horrible educational experiences they must have had
mm-hmm.
and who socially promoted them through the system.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't because of the rigor in their thinking.
Uh-huh.
Because... I've heard and seen things said and agreed to more
mm-hmm.
through silence. I could show you an email thread right now where 30 people are on that email.
Uh-huh.
Two voices were heard.
Uh-huh.
The silence was deafening.
Uh-huh.
As they say. This had to do with free speech.
Okay.
And expression of ideas.
Uh-huh.
And what is acceptable and not acceptable within an academic institution that's trying to be rigorous and thoughtful.
Yeah, so I did send an email, like, we'll see what comes of it, but I sent an email complaining to the professor.
You should.
And
you should. But we know how that gets treated in those environments.
Yeah.
And it definitely brought you down a grade.
No, I don't think so.
I would assume it would.
I don't think so.
We'll see.
We'll see. But like this particular professor seems like relatively good. Like he.
Then why are they saying this thing that is entirely contrary to the
relative? I said relatively.
Oh. Well,
so in the sense that
you're comparing them to other psychopaths that work here.
Yeah.
Oh well, that's different. I'm like, comparing them to people that might have gone to school, maybe what in my day we called a basic high school education.
Mm-hmm.
That someone with a basic high school education from when I was young,
mm-hmm,
would never do something like that.
Yeah.
Telling college students,
uh-huh,
not to come to class,
mm-hmm,
because whatever political whatever, and that they would actually have their grade affected,
mm-hmm,
by demonstrating that they showed up there instead of in class,
mm-hmm,
and that, like, that is fundamentally opposed to any sort of concept. Now, I understand, were it truly groundbreakingly important that you felt that all the students are going to be going to this demonstration and the ones that aren't should be anyway, then what you do is you just cancel class on that day,
mm-hmm,
and say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But to say you should go, mm-hmm, and take a picture and all that,
mm-hmm,
that's unimaginable. Because let's say you did want them to go, cancel class.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that kind of demonstration. I've been here long enough to know. How's this? There used to be a college Democrat and college Republican club here.
Uh-huh.
And they'd have arguments.
Yeah.
Down there.
There used to be
all sorts of groups around here that had varying viewpoints.
Yeah.
And the Palestinians versus the Halal or whatever like,
yeah,
that. And not Halal. What's the college group for Jews?
Hillel,
sorry. That doesn't exist anymore.
So they did it. Riley Gaines was actually on campus the other week.
Oh, but that's not...
Yeah.
And I don't know who that is offhand, but the thing is, it used to be in front of students that you'd see that there were these different groups.
Yeah.
That this was a known thing, and you'd know who was the head of the college Republicans,
uh-huh,
and blah, blah, blah. That doesn't even happen here on this campus.
Mm-hmm.
You would think would be one of the most politically charged campuses in the country, given San Francisco's position in the ideas space.
Yeah.
And there is no longer political discussion on this campus. There is obedience,
uh-huh,
to a certain perspective.
Well, so that was what was exciting about... So Riley Gaines is a former collegiate swimmer who is like...
Oh, this is the one where she got assaulted or something?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I don't know, like, her talk itself was, like...
Probably mediocre.
IQ 110 Republican slop is how I described it.
Okay.
But, like, it
the
was...
The reaction that was outside.
Yeah, it was just very striking to contrast, like, inside and the protesters outside,
mm-hmm,
in that, like... At least, like, Gaines, like, had this idea of, like, it looks better for her to, like, care about, reasoning and discourse. And, like, she actually said, like, you know, I'm glad that people who disagree with me came here to listen.
And, but they weren't there to listen.
I mean, so the people, this one was, like...
Because the current state is shut down speakers.
Yeah.
Not listen and have a debate.
Right, so there was a few minutes in, like, one male in the audience started shouting, like, loser bitch, how do you lose to four cis women? And then that went on for, like, a couple minutes before, like, the crowd, like, urged the police officers to intervene and they escorted him out.
Well, that's good.
But it was just really striking that, like, the people outside did not have the concept that, like, because, like, afterwards, I just, for fun or, like, as an experiment, I was like, hey, anyone want to debate?
Uh-huh.
And there was a guy who was like, no, right. None of us want to talk to you.
Right. It's about obedience.
Yeah. But, like, sure. Just, like, the... They didn't have the concept of, like, you know, it would look better for us if we were willing to argue and... expect to win an argument on the merits.
That's not the goal.
Yeah.
The goal is to silence opposition.
Yeah.
And both sides are using that.
Yeah.
But in
this particular case, it was pretty asymmetrical.
Oh, sure.
That, like, Riley Gaines...
Oh, come on, look at this campus.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
You're going into the dragon's den.
Yeah.
I get that. But the thing is, it's like... This is a problem on the left, is that they are not interested in winning the argument. They're interested in shutting down any voice on the other side.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is going on, especially around the trans debate. How's this? Think about, what's the Harry Potter lady?
J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling. So, she's obviously a TERF,
mm-hmm.
and that's her thing. She is otherwise...
I mean, she's also been radicalized, though. Well, in that, well, like, her originally...
Of course. She's obviously a lefty.
Yeah.
Going into this, she's a total lefty.
Yeah.
Except she's a TERF.
Yeah.
And because she's been so vilified, it's pushed her over. How about Jordan Peterson?
Yeah.
Now, whatever you think about Jordan Peterson, from my perspective,
mm-hmm.
if more young men were listening to Jordan Peterson of old, not mm-hmm. not the brand new Jordan Peterson,
uh-huh.
of old, it would be better for our society and those men
mm-hmm.
if you were listening to what he had to say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, he's conservative, he's religious, and he's anti-communist,
mm-hmm.
right? That's his character.
Yeah.
But the thing is, what he's saying is generally good. But the thing is, the left vilified him and went to war against him
mm-hmm.
so hard, they pushed him to the right.
Mm-hmm.
He's much more right-wing now than he ever was before.
Yeah.
Why? Because if they're going to fight a war against him and not stop, he's better off just fucking going to the other side.
Yeah.
Just like J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
And just like all these people where it's like, what the fuck's the problem with J.K. Rowling having an opinion?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't agree with her opinion. I don't care. And the thing is, she's not even coming at it like she's a right-wing conservative nutjob.
Mm-hmm.
She's a TERF.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's coming at it from a total feminist point of view.
Yeah.
So now you have a problem with feminists?
Mm-hmm.
Because they have to be aligned so specifically with your cause that in many ways could be tied to the lack of... the gay rights movement having a product to sell?
Yeah.
Which is pretty risky when that's how you build a movement. Anyway, I guess we've had a discussion.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Did you talk about what you wanted to talk about?
I think we covered, like...
We covered a few things.
Like, I didn't cover my entire, like, backstory, but that might not be...
This might not be this might not be a biography.
Yeah.
Well... Do you think it's
like
there's something
like,
that was left there?
I think this was fun. I don't know how many like listeners you have. Like, is this for the?
I always assume nobody's going to read a word I say.
Okay.
And I also don't believe that I'm in the thinky space.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things I publish that are adjacent to education.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably rate coming up more and more now.
Uh-huh.
Your perspective is interesting. And it's not the same as most students are in the current era. So there, I think there's value there. I have to listen to it.
Okay.
Do you have it recorded?
Yeah, I've been recording.
Okay.
But also, like, you might, like...
I'll share the link to you so you can have my recording, too.
Have you... So, like, hand transcribing would be, like, way too expensive, but, like, the exciting thing about
Just put it on YouTube and it transcribes it for you.
Okay.
But So you could have that. I'll just send you a link in a Dropbox for an MP3 file.
Okay, thanks. But like, if you make it, if you ever make a new poster, like, I'm fine with publishing this.
Yes, I that's why I asked you at the beginning.
Okay, yeah.
I may or may not.
Okay.
That's the thing. I may or may not. It depends on how it fits in.
Okay.
But I think it'll be interesting. It's always good to listen back to yourself.
Yeah.
That's something I've learned about all my interviews and stuff, is that when you hear yourself explain your position, not in real time, like later on, when you're calm, you're just driving in the rain,
yeah,
listening to it, and you think, is that what I meant?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that the person I am? And going through that exercise, have you listened to yourself in it?
Yeah, sometimes. I've done a podcast.
Okay. Okay, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I try to explain this concept to students where I say, do an interview. Interview your mom, dad, your brother, your buddy that catches all the girls. Like, whatever. Just interview them. And then listen to it. But mostly listen to how you sound and think, do I sound like an intelligent person having a discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, you need to fix it.
Yeah.
You know? And because we can learn. It's just most people don't listen to themselves. Not in an asynchronous sense. When they're out of the emotion of the moment. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like, this,
for coming by.
This was interesting. And like, just because, you know, I saw the posters and I'm like, there's something here. We should like do something about it.
I hope so. I'm a firm believer. I'm on a college campus.
Yeah.
And I need to act that way.
I'm almost regretful that, I'm glad the thing you're doing here exists.
Uh-huh.
I don't immediately have anything to contribute to your club because I work in bits, not atoms.
I know.
I do computer stuff.
This is a university. Uh-huh. But as such, that means there's a lot of people doing a lot of different stuff.
Yeah.
And I get it.
Is there... Okay,
we have enough people here that should be aligned with this space.
Uh-huh.
Where the problem.
Is there, so given that I'm not a build physical things specialist, I'm a build information software. Abstract, software, math, philosophy, that kind of thing.
Sure.
Is there a small project that I should do just to get a taste of what the thing is, even if I'm not going to re-specialize?
I would say do a Velleman kit. Have you done electronic circuits?
No.
Do something like that.
Do you know what a Velleman kit is? I do not know what that is.
Go on to Amazon, type in Velleman kit or electronics kit on Amazon. You'll see Velleman come up and they send you a board and all the components and an electronic schematic and a description of the components. And you make a thing like an oscilloscope or a sound generator or something like that out of electronic parts.
Uh-huh.
And they'll have an IC chip that you've heard of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
This is silicon ingot and it's getting extruded. These are silicon wafers.
Uh-huh.
I need one that's been etched.
Yeah.
So that we can see the circuits. But, you know, in your phone, whatever, this has probably been cut up into, I don't know, 800 chunks.
Yeah.
And one of those chunks is in your phone. And that's Silicon Valley. But it started with electronic circuits. So since you work with bits...
I don't think about the substrate.
Right.
I'm lost in abstraction.
Right.
So I don't like thinking in semesters, but practically speaking, I'm kind of busy this semester with the. Yeah. I'm gonna write a report on the gamma function. So the other thing I like about the.
The statistical gamma function.
I mean, it's used in statistics.
Probability distribution.
Well, this is the.
Or distribution function.
There is the gamma distribution involved. The definition of the gamma distribution involves the gamma function. This is a generalized factorial.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
You've already gone over my head.
Anyway, the point is I'm busy through May. But I will.
You're welcome to stop by and do an electronics kit. We have a soldering iron and scopes and meters in the other room. And that way you can make an electrical circuit. And that is the thing all your bits end up running on.
Are you still here in the summer?
Mm-hmm. Although I take a vacation at times, but I'm generally around.
I might, like, I'm pretty busy for the next couple months, but I'll think about it. Thank you.
I'm glad you're busy. All right, I'm turning this off.
Okay.